it's interesting how the numbers become obsolete after a certain point, right? I imagine if you're like a YouTuber or whatever and you've got like multiple million subscribers, I'm like, how do you even fathom that? Like,
yeah, it
at
is...
that point, your audience is just an algorithmic bundle of number, right?
Whenever I watch, and so I watch Graham Stark from Loading Ready Run talking about Elder Dragon Social Club. I watch his G-Vlogs channel, which is just him. And I'm like, it's like they sometimes go to like conventions like PAX or whatever. And as soon as he drops a video, because it's not on like the main LRR page, it's not like tens of thousands, but like in the first couple of hours, he'll get like a couple of thousand followers or viewers or whatever. I'm like, that's like instantly more than any episode will ever make. But as you say, it's suddenly they become numbers on a screen, you know, and that's even as engaged as people like Loading Ready Run on with their fan base. So, I mean, you know, it's, there are plus sides to having a couple of hundred listens per episode, because you know the people who listen to it, like, you know, you don't have everyone.
Yeah, we're not going to get hate or anything either, which is quite nice. Like people, I mean, unless you get hate that you don't tell
it's a numbers
about.
Game. I mean, if we have like 200 like solid followers for our podcast, and like 30 of them hate us, that's kind of like, why are you people listening to us?
Yeah, I did. Find something better to do.
Thank God you don't engage with us on Twitter. Welcome to Magic the Flavouring, the Magic the Gathering podcast, where we talk about all things magic flavour design and lore. I'm your host, Andy Mann.
Hello, it's Nathan Cancel.
Hi, all 200 of you. we're taking a break from the story. And
I think just meant in general, you're just going to be like, that's taking a break, close the episode, we'll see you in 6 months.
Well, like, so I'm not going to talk about product fatigue too much. I'm not going to talk about it all, but there's obviously a lot of product. And I think we mentioned before about how Michelle Rapp said it's like a sushi bar. You pick and choose whatever this, that, and the other. There have been some big reveals. There's been more story that we haven't covered. We haven't talked about Aftermath yet.
At all.
We might do. I think we should talk about that in a more globulous, amorphous way.
Yeah. Instead of picking apart the, oh, look at this card, blah, blah, blah.
It's 50 cards and two stories. You'll probably just talk about it all, right?
It's a bunch of commanders and a little bit of potential stories surrounding it. It was basically the reject pile. It's the runt of the litter part of the set. It's worth looking at. I think it's worth looking at as a whole, a combination of the story aspect, the mechanics, as well, instead of having to do like a split of it.
Because
it's less stories than we thought it was going to be to begin with anyway. It's only two, which comes with its own problems. The set itself is only like a half set. So I feel like we can bundle both of those two things together and just look at it as a whole with a bit of perspective. Give it a bit of time to settle and then see like, how does it look now the dust has settled?
Exactly. And in fact, so we're not going to do that now. We said before, we don't want to turn this into like a news podcast where it's just MTG news with us waffling about the pictures. So the original idea for this episode was actually going to be something even more left field and kind of not particularly relevant to right now. But that had to be rescheduled. So instead,
it's still coming.
Still definitely coming. So what we're doing instead is we're talking about the Plane Chase cards. That came out in the Commander decks.
Yes, indeed.
We love Plane Chase. We go on about it all the time.
Yeah, we're big fans.
We did episodes on it way back when we were still kind of like had the time and the patience to cover everything and anything except for what, you know, and not just what was happening right now and now. So now we're just going to talk about the new cards because they're fucking cool. Yeah. Some of them aren't.
Interesting. Well, that's the thing, right? So similar, I think, it's also interesting coming off the back of the last episode because we spoke a lot about battles. And the sieges and the different invasions. And I think this almost like Plane Chase is kind of a similar reflection of what does the planes magic as a whole look like? And obviously the plane as a whole is a bit of a hyperbole because some of them we're specifically looking at a specific wood, some of it's a whole continent, some of it's like from what we've seen of the set, that's the what we've seen, say for example of Kylan, we've only ever seen the bit of the plane that the plane's showing,
Valor's Reach,
and we don't know anything else about the plane, but you know, of course it does say Valor's Reach and then Plane Kylan, and there's probably bunches of other bits and pieces around that, you know, that we don't know about, the Wizard hasn't written about, so it might as well not exist. But point being that it's a kind of a good reflection of like, what does the planes magic look like? Not what do the individual cards look like. What is the planes magic, and how does Wizards want to represent those planes?
Yeah,
you know, what does it want to evoke whenever you think of, you know, Eldraine or of the specific part of the specific plane? What are you supposed to think from a magic-y kind of point of view?
Yeah,
which is quite cool because what have they assigned? Do we feel like it fits? Is it boring and generic, or has it got nuance?
How many were there? Was it 25?
25.
25
yes.
New ones.
Yes,
and they also did 25 of the older set in with the Commander decks as well, which I thought was kind of interesting. Also, does anyone play Planes Chase the way that it was originally intended?
I don't even know how it's originally intended. So apparently there's this whole thing of where you're supposed to each have your own decks, and like, so is every effect global? So if you've got four different global plane effects happening, so in the way I look at it is, the way we do it is just with a stack, and we just flip them over.
So it's a world effect.
Yeah, like the way that I've heard it done as well is kind of like pioneering, like as adventurers, and you have them all face down, and you can only move left or right or up or down.
Oh, that's such a good way of doing it, like a D&D style, when you with the tiles.
Exactly, so it's progressive, and each time you go to a new tile, each time you go to a new plane, you place three more around.
I'm sure we've spoken about this before, but I've forgotten about it.
It's just how much space you have on your table, you know, especially when you're playing a four-player, five-player, whatever game, which Planes Chase games typically are. You're never playing it 1v1. Like, you don't have space for a whole bloody plane chase like map of the way you've gone through and everything, so it doesn't necessarily work so well. But that is another like legitimate way to play it. So I mean, I think the good thing about Plane Chase is it's kind of like an ancillary aspect of the game that you can kind of decide how it affects. You can curtail certain planes, take certain, you know, phenomenon out, or certain planes that you think that are a bit too polarizing, certain things that might be too broken. You might take the ones out that are too specific. You know, there are certain ones that only affect certain colors, and you might be like, oh, let's make sure that only the universal effects are left within the plane chase pile. So I think it's one of those things that, because it's such an addition to the game, you can kind of choose how it, what it adds to the game and how you let it affect the game.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's like, and there is probably official rulings on it, but I don't think that any particular play group can say this is the way definitively it has to be played.
Well, from what I understand, so I mean, we haven't really spoken about the rules of Plane Chase, because again, I think we've spoken about this before, but the very fact that they put these cards in with the Commander product, which is a wild move really, because it looked like that they had kind of shelved Plane Chase as a product line and a game style completely, especially when you bring in things like, you know, battles. Battles are to Plane Chase what companions were to bringing Commander into a 1v1 format. You know what I mean? So we haven't explained what they are necessarily, but the from what I understand, because the original anthologies and the original sets, you had a 60 card just like tabletop deck, constructed deck, and I think you were meant to have your own planar pile, which makes sense with some of the cards. The wording really ramps up the madness. I think I'm talking like the Norn's Seed Core, which we'll get onto. Like, if you think of that in the context of everyone has a planar deck, like, it kind of gets a little bit nutty. But yeah. I think definitely the definitive way that most people play it is that you have a stack of planar cards in the middle, everyone has a chance to Planes Chase or to Chaos Warp, and you go around and you all have, like, the same effect. That's only how we would play it. I have played with the 25 new cards.
You have?
Yeah, so the last time that I was down at Rule Zero, you unfortunately weren't able to come.
Yeah.
One of our playgroup had the 25 Planes Chase cards, and we had I think it was like a 6-player plane chase.
Nice.
Which I won. I mean, getting that in there.
Can you count it as, isn't it like a pyrrhic victory when it comes to plane chase? Because it's such a garbled
bastardization of the game. I did nothing for the whole game. I went heads up against someone, just happened to be in a better board state than them, and didn't hit any whiffy like planes.
Sounds
and just
like
won.
A 6-player game to me.
Yeah, exactly. But I won it. And so I can definitely say that these cards are fun to play with. That isn't always the same as being flavorful. And I'll say it before I say it again. We are a flavor podcast. We sometimes care if the card is a good game piece, but most of the time we'll take flavor over a game piece in the context of this podcast that we're doing. When we're at the LGS, don't...
Be damned.
Yeah, don't test that theory.
So it's kind of, it is interesting that you bring up that idea that the initial Plane Chase product was 60-card decks. I think it was Velia of the Nightclad, Krond of the Dawnclad... wasn't Maelstrom Wanderer originally part of the Plane Chase product? I don't think
No, I think that was Commander.
Was it? Because I remember it having the little symbol with the rays. I mean, maybe I'm misremembering. But
it's a long time ago.
Yeah, the idea is that Commander's already funky. Adding Plane Chase to Commander is like it's putting some right fuck into the fuck there, really. Like,
but it's a great leveler. I know I've said this before.
Yeah.
It's if someone has I know the power scale is out of fashion now, but if someone has a 7 deck and everyone else is playing with 4s, throw Planes Chase in there, suddenly it doesn't matter so much.
Yeah, that 7 isn't going to be able to necessarily function. I mean, you can choose to ignore the planes, but you've got 3 other players that are then automatic, like, you know, that are feeding into it, and you can't control what happens. You know, there's a wrath phenomenon, for God's sake. There's one that makes the order of play go back the other way. So yeah, there's anything can happen is one of the ideas. And I know
change life totals is another one of the
exactly set, yeah. Like Commander is supposed to be a whole anything can happen feeling from building your deck. I mean, within whatever you build it to, but yeah, it's that extra kind of don't rely on your game plan because there isn't one really. Yeah. You know, it's like someone Wheel of Fortuneing every hand. Which, actually, now I say it, sounds awful.
Yeah, that's just Possibility Storm.
Yeah.
Oh. I saw this... We haven't even gotten to the start of this episode yet. I saw on Twitter the other day discourse surrounding Possibility Storm. And I can't even remember the content creator that was in favour of it, but someone was legitimately going, I don't understand why people have a problem with Possibility Storm. And I thought, you fucking do. You just want to stir the pot. And if you don't have a problem with Possibility Storm, chill. But guess, you must know why other people do.
Yeah. It's
you
like,
must know.
It's the Teferi's puzzle box thing of where, I, from my point of view, I think having a new hand I have to work with every turn is kind of funny. For the average player who's still learning how to play their deck, or like maybe, you know, they could be the most seasoned player in the world and still only have, like, you know, built their new deck this last week. Yeah. Having a new hand every game, every turn, when you've spent the last, you know, 10 minutes when everyone else takes their turn, figure out what you're going to do with your turn. You might as well just sit back. Every time you pass your turn when there's a Teferi puzzle box out, you might as well just go to the toilet for a little bit. Because by the time you come back, you get a new hand, you have to replan your turn out anyway.
With the Possibility Storm, the one, this is a different episode now, but the one, we're talking about Magic, the one, someone's argument was saying, well, you know, RNG is part of Magic. Like, you don't know the card you're going to get off the top of your deck. Why is this any different? And I thought, because you know the card
you're
in
playing.
Your hand.
Yeah, you're choosing to play that card.
If my deck has three bits of removal in it, and two of them in the bin, one of them's in hand, and I play that removal and it gets Possibility Stormed, I don't have... Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's not like for like.
You don't know if it's going to be a draw spell, a bounce spell, it could be a mill spell, it could be
anything.
You have no control, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So... vis-a-vis, if you don't take anything from this podcast episode, just take this. If you like Possibility Storm, fine. But you know why the people don't. And if you say that you don't, you're a liar and a dick.
And it's the same with planes. If you're playing Plane Chase, you know you're not sitting down for a normal game of Magic
the
Gathering.
Suck up. You have to get involved.
It's going to be crazy. Roll that dice as much as you bloody well
if
can.
If you've only ever played Plane Chase because it's been in this Commander product, A, good on Wizards for pushing a really good format idea, and B, don't be the player that goes, yeah, I'll play Plane Chase, and then by turn three, either ignores the deck completely or kind of goes, oh, this is boring. If you sit down, pick a deck you know is going to play well. I play my Karlov deck without any fear of people having to go at me. It gains a lot of life. It gets me value. It keeps me in the game. Mm-hmm. Don't play your Glass Cannon deck in a Plane Chase game and then sit there all salty because nothing's happening.
Yeah, don't play a combo deck where the stars need to align, because with Plane Chase, you might not even be on a plane that has stars.
Let's talk about the first new plane. I think we're going on the same order because you set me up on Skyfall.
The Wilds.
Yeah. So let's talk about the Wilds. Plane of Eldraine. Straight in with a fan familiar plane, but this is the first time that's shown up. So obviously, I mean, first we're going to segue it automatically. This 25 set of Planes Chase cards serves two functions flavorfully. They're to get brand new planes that we've never seen before, but maybe have been referenced in other media, but have never been really on a card or anything like that, into the game. Second, it's to get planes which people have always, who are maybe newer to the game and have seen the old Plane Chase products, going, hang on a minute, what do you mean there isn't a Kaladesh card or an Eldraine card? And it's updating the
exactly,
roster of cards,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I wonder, because the third function of the old Planes Chase decks was to
test ground drive for future. And I'm looking through, we'll get to it. I think there's one or two that are likely potential plants, but I think they're a little bit more careful now, because I think they threw out a lot of options before, and I think now they're a little bit more controlled about where they see the next, you know, 5-10 years going.
Yeah, very true.
So it might have just been like, you know, they were spaghettiing the wall a little bit with the first thing, whereas this might be a little bit more structured, a more cultured pool. But let's see. I mean, for now, we know what we're doing.
Yeah. The Wilds on the Plain of Eldraine. When you planes walk to the Wilds at the beginning of your upkeep, create a food token. Whenever chaos ensues, target player sacrifices a creature. If they do, you create a food token. You create two food tokens instead if the sacrificed creature's toughness was 4 or greater. And the artwork is by Chris Seaman. What do you reckon for Eldraine?
So this already raises multiple points. One, one, questionable artwork.
This is going to be a 2-hour podcast.
Yeah, one, questionable artwork. Two, wouldn't you feel dirty as the Wilds if your main, like, mechanic was just making food?
Yeah.
And I know this is the thing, right, so this is, I'm gonna cross-examine my own point in the same breath, and the thing is, you kind of need to identify your plane down to certain mechanics. And yes, food first came out in Eldraine. There were a lot of very flavorful cards, like, you know, bake into a pie and then make it, what was it, the three little pigs and the big bad wolf kind of analogy of where it made three food tokens, like, because those
ginger
were the... Yeah, like, it worked and it made sense. But from my point of view, food seems more... It's not like... Does food not to you feel like more like a meal rather than just stuff you can eat?
Well, maybe.
I don't know why, but in my mind it makes it feel more like the Wilds would be less about having... food, because food feels like it's something that a human calls it food, an animal doesn't call it food.
No, but the Wilds was also home to a lot of things like the gingerbread house and poison apples and
sure.
kind of stuff.
And I guess for me it's just maybe because I don't particularly like food as a mechanic, maybe I just feel like it kind of whitewashes the Wilds a little bit too much. But then saying that, maybe they didn't want to give away too much when they really... I mean, this is the other thing, they really could have given away a little bit of what the Wilds are going to look like when we go to the Wilds
of
Old Drain.
Well, now, this is the thing. So I what I'm going to infer... We haven't spoken about any of this, by the way, if you're listening. This is us, me and Nathan, talking about this for literally the first time. Is the artwork to you a bit of a miss because it looks quite plain?
I'm also not entirely sure what's going on with the wood in the background. I'm a bit pissed that you still see the town
you
in the very, very background.
Yeah.
It doesn't look very Wild.
Because my theory is, because there's a few, we'll get onto a couple of these cards, where it's definitely post-events of some description. So the thing I'm thinking of is when we go to Amonkhet, it's definitely post the fall of Naktamun.
So it's after the hours have come.
So, but are all of these planes now... after
are they present time in our timeline or are they representation
are the Wilds showing? If this is post Frex invasion, obviously, I mean, it's interesting they called this one the Wilds. We can't take this long over every single one of them, but it's interesting they called this the Wilds because we are going to Throne of Eldraine, the Wilds of Eldraine is the next set, right? So we will definitely see it. I wonder if this is what the remnants of the Wilds are after the Phyrexian invasion.
Sure, yeah.
Could be wrong.
I mean, I guess it's also a question we don't know until we get to it, whether or not food will be the primary thing. But I guess there is also a degree of like, look, they might not have thought so much into it and make these... You don't want the plane to be crazy, crazy. It's just, you go to Eldraine, guess what Eldraine's known for? Food. Things dying and you gain food for things dying. And that makes sense, I get it. It feels a little bit Jundy. You know, that's the thing that kind of reminds me of. It makes me feel a little bit like eating things and devouring things has already been done before. The Wilds, I thought, just have a little bit more fickleness than just generic life gain food tokens.
Yeah.
Just me. You know, just me.
Moving on. The Western Cloud.
All along the Western Cloud.
You know that's not the lyrics to
I know.
Right. You did that a couple of times pre-record as well.
Yeah, I know.
I was like, all right.
I just wanted to test whether I get the tone. And
the... I had to learn the keyboard part to that song for a gig at St. Mary's. Our shared university. I looked at the laptop when I did that and did fingers between me and Nathan as if anyone's watching us do that. Anyway, the Western Cloud on the plane of Gobakan. Gobakan! I don't know why I said it like that. prevent all damage that would be dealt to creatures and planeswalkers you control. And the chaos is whenever chaos ensues. I love that they use ensue.
This is great wording.
Create 3 tapped treasure tokens. They each deal 1 damage to each creature and each planeswalker.
So.
Thoughts and feelings on a postcard.
So. Why would it say you control if the plane wasn't specific to your board? Why wouldn't it just be prevent all damage that would be dealt to creatures and planeswalkers if it's supposed to be global? Does this not denote that it's not global? Or is it only affecting you on your turn?
Well, I think this means that this is relevant if you each have your own deck of planeswalkers.
Yeah, exactly.
Planes chase cards.
Okay, cool. Because that's one of the things, that's kind of what I'm, you know, that's what I'm thinking is like, this kind of proves it to me a little bit. Like, because this is not necessarily supposed to sat in the middle. Because if it is supposed to be played in the middle, then at that point, all damage is prevented to all creatures and planeswalkers until you leave that plane. Which I think, from a flavour point of view, Gobakan has the big diamond storms. We've seen a lot. I mean, even in the invasion of Gobakan, like the flip side of it was an enchantment you can sacrifice to give your creatures indestructible and hexproof, which is exactly what, you know, kind of the whole point is shield mages, all of that kind of stuff. Makes sense. I like the idea that you're creating tapped treasure tokens, not untapped, so tapped treasure tokens, and it's almost like that's the treasure for them are diamonds, right? So the diamonds are coming in and they're dealing damage to everything.
Well, and they've also hit the ground.
Yeah.
So it's almost like they're embedded.
Exactly.
So you can't use them straight away, right?
Exactly. So I like this idea of like, it makes sense in terms of the diamond storms and also the shield mage magic, because that's the thing you also want, is you want the general effect, like the static effect, to be synonymous of the set. And then you also want the chaos ensues effect to feel like a spell from the set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's kind of also why the Wilds kind of annoy me, because it was food and food again.
Yeah, sure.
Whereas this is preventing all damage damage, and then, oh, I've got these treasures coming in, dealing one damage, dealing essentially three damage to each creature, but mine don't get damaged because I prevent all damage to my creatures.
Yeah.
Which I think succinctly really, really works. Also, we didn't say artist, but Titus Winter.
Oh, Titus Winter, yeah.
Ooh, this is a really cool
Hi,
artwork.
Titus.
Really, really nice
I
artwork.
Would have said friend of the podcast. I don't think he likes us very much.
I don't think a lot of people like us very much.
When we interviewed him, I think we were... I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Titus, I'm sorry if I completely misread you.
You've got to come back and prove
I really
friendship.
Liked the episode. I listened to it again the other day, but since then, I'm just like, I don't think he was too fussed about what we were trying to say to him.
You can't win them all. Your artwork's cool, mate.
Beautiful artwork.
It's great. It's
and
fantastic.
You're a great guy, so, you know.
question, the Eastern Clouds, the Northern Cloud, the Southern Cloud, is it going to be like Kadama? Are we going to get that going
well,
forward?
Well, I just sort of think it's clearly a plane that's defined by these diamond storms. Mm. So obviously they would have... like names for it or
yeah,
ideas.
It feels very
about
Dooney
it.
Doesn't it?
Yeah,
it feels very Dooney.
Yeah. I definitely feel like we're going there sometime in the next couple of years. They've been planting it too much because they didn't mention Teo or Gobakan fucking at all since those goddamn books until
the invasion
recently. Yeah.
And so I think we're probably going to see him back. Yeah. So I'd also like to see Teo come back with a bit grown up, a bit more grown up.
Yeah.
He's too much of a whiny kid. He's now come into his. Yeah. He's now found out that he might have been weak on his own plane, but he's ridiculously strong in other planes. Yeah. And then again, probably doesn't have a spark anymore because of Aftermath. Good job, Wizards. Way to fuck up agency. But you know, I'd like to go back and see what he's doing, how he's handling things.
Shield magic protects him from the Blind Eternities. So he can literally just... But he has to traverse them in real time. So he ages He ages like 100 years between them.
That's ridiculous. I also kind of want to see the Gobakans and the Quandrix together. The geometric and the shield-made magic. Right? Yeah. I want to see that combined. This is where the crossover should have been, you know? It should have been fucking Zimone and Teo. And they could have been
Zimone and Teo would have been a good card.
Really cool. Yeah, I mean, hey-ho.
Hey-ho. Next up, Valor's Regee. Oh dear. On the plane of Kylum. Back to Kylum. Whenever your team attacks, your team, they know what they're doing. Whenever your team attacks with exactly two creatures, those creatures gain double strike until end of turn. Chaos. Whenever chaos ensues, untap up to two target creatures your team controls. If it's a main phase...
Not yours.
Not pre-combat.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
If it's a main phase, there is an additional combat phase after this phase, followed by an additional main phase. So what, that's Seize the Day, is it?
Seize the Day was one specific creature untaps. So it's close.
But I mean, like the extra combat, extra phase after the combat phase.
Yeah, so it's actually kind of more similar to Morog, because Morog... adds an additional combat and you untap. So if you were to do it in your pre-combat main phase, you would lose the untap ability. So yeah, it's one of these things, if you want to do it after, it's almost like you attack, you kind of see where everything landed, and then you get to do the whole chaos ensues, and then you get to go again. It kind of stops you just being able to generically go, hey, I've got four combats this turn.
Artwork by Camilla Zutzenberg. Do you recognise that name off the
top
of your
head? I'm quite literally going to click it and click the name. Zutzenberg.
They've done a few bits of artwork now.
Ooh, quite a lot of lands, actually.
Quite a lot of lands.
Almost... specifically only lands, actually. You've got Patria's Seal. Otherwise, it's...
It's all lands.
It's all lands, yeah.
Lands from some of the Specialist Commander products. So they did the lands, it seems, for the... what do you call it? Warhammer one.
Mm-hmm.
They've also done another planar card in this set. And they've done a couple of... I think
it's
only
probably
one
my favourite, actually.
The only one out of Specialist set that they've done is Demolition Field from Brothers War.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh no, sorry. And Sacred Peaks from Dominaria United, which is a fucking rad card.
They're all like, the more I look at them, like the Camilla's style, especially for art for lands, like the clouds on Nomad Outpost, for example, is stunning.
Very Titus Lintry, if anything, like big sweeping escapes. And Valor's Reach is no different. So, obviously, playing into the Battle Bond mechanics.
Yeah, we're attacking as pairs. Like they really. I mean, that's the theme, right? I mean, again, if. What would you consider to be Valor's Reach battle bonds is two, right? So whenever you attack with exactly two creatures, specifically your team as well. So this is also encouraging you to play, two-headed
giant
two-headed commander plane chase. I mean, obviously, this does nothing about planes chase requires you to play commander. In fact, if anything, it's probably requiring you to play more simple formats.
They didn't do a card which specifically references commanders unless I missed it.
Exactly.
Despite them selling this in a commander product.
I mean, I guess it's one of the only places you could have put it without doing another anthology. But I like the idea that, yeah, it encourages playing two-headed giant. I like the fact that they both get double strike because it's the two hits for the two creatures, which is quite cute. Untapping two creatures and then having a second, so two combat phases. It's all deuce, 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 which could feel a little bit meh, but I feel like all of those things together, it works quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you're only showing us Valor's Reach of Kylem, it makes sense that it's only got this Battle Bond mechanic. What other parts of Kylem are there? We don't know. Will we ever see them? We don't know. Doesn't matter. Valor's Reach.
Well, I mean, so on those la 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 Smurf theme. I don't know why I just
said
that.
Wow, nice.
On those dual lands, which come in if you've got more than one opponent.
Yes.
They showed us more areas than Valor's Reach.
Oh, they did. They showed us the Undergrowth, right?
The Undergrowth arena. They showed us the Training Ground.
Rejuvenation Springs. Because, I mean, it's funny, right? Because as artwork goes, like, Valor's Reach is a very cool place, but again, metaphysically, justify these giant walkway, like, what do they look like? Aqueducts, almost. It was like aqueducts just spanning off into the horizon. Like, how is that a good way to get anywhere on any plane?
So, are you heading to Valor's Reach today? Well, I'm heading off today. I'm going to see the game in about a week.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, what if you've got a fear of heights? You can't go anywhere in Valor's Reach.
Oh, no.
I know.
Ravnica's got a similar problem.
Yeah, like, I mean, there are some... Obviously, we're trying to pick apart, like, the architecture of a fantasy game. But it does some... There are some that give more question marks than others. And I feel like Valor's Reach definitely gives some question marks.
Well, I suppose...
How did they build them?
I suppose Kylem has a lot of that referee magic as well from the homunculi. Who can kind of, you know, no one gets killed. Even though...
True.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's almost similar. Like, didn't they have a similar thing with the Strixhaven ball game thing that they had, of where, like, there was a way to, like, you could never
deal... Yeah, ball, whatever they called it.
Yeah, you weren't able to actually, like, Quidditch. Yeah, fuck it, let's call it Quidditch.
No, let's not. I don't want to have that film.
But yeah, I guess the idea was that you weren't able to go too far beyond, like, you know, damaging the other people or whatever. It makes sense. When you're in a magic school, you've got to have some fail-safes in place.
Do you know what was wild about that Strixhaven game? And there is a Strixhaven card in this. We'll get to it, I suppose, when we get to it. But do you know what was wild to me about that mascot-based game?
Mm.
You still had to be, like, physically able to play that game, because it was essentially rugby.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
It's a wizard school.
Well, so there's, I guess, if someone's really, really, like, is there such thing as being, like arcanely lethargic?
Well, no, but
can you be
really
fit?
I don't want to get too deep into
the,
like,
fitness,
you know,
of my magic spells.
I'm not trying to make this into, like, an accessibility thing, because I don't have the experience to comment on that kind of shit. My point is that in a school that it was explicitly a plane that although all of the battle stuff was more about wit and guile, even in even when you were doing, like, wizard dueling, it was still more like academia based. And the sport they play, whilst having magical elements, was still all about, you run really fast?
Yeah, because I guess it becomes really tricky as well when you have, like, a plane that has, like, elephant people as well as, like, tiny dryads. And it's like, how do you, if you don't have weight classes, how do you justify that they're playing the same game but have very differing physical ability?
Yeah.
This is probably why they didn't go into it.
Well, yada yada bit.
Exactly.
I mean, I did like the cards whenever it was referenced on the cards because it looked like a fun thing. But
yeah,
it's
cute. Yeah, and obviously we're picking quite hard into it, but that's fine. That's okay.
Yeah.
Right. Can I do the next one?
Yeah.
Not for any other reason other than it's a return to Zalfir. Zalfir's back. Yay. Yeah, there we go. Unyaro. Plain Zalfir. At the beginning of your end step, if you planeswalk to Unyaro this turn, untap all creatures. They phase out until the player planeswalks. Whenever chaos ensues, create two white and blue night creature tokens with vigilance. I've got a slight bugbear about why all of the knights from Zalfir have to be white and blue these days. I mean,
what,
I know
why?
Because it's tight. I mean, I guess they didn't want to have to make yet another token. But just kind of, I found it interesting that Xerix made white blue tokens. Teferi makes white blue tokens. I mean, there's something to me about, and I think I said this a few episodes ago about. The colour of tokens is kind of a little bit unnecessary. Like, why does Huatli make a 3-3 green dinosaur? And why doesn't that annoy people? Why does, for example, Generous Gift make a 3-3 green elephant? Like, why... The colouring of tokens, to me, seems a little bit redundant sometimes. Especially, like, for this, why does it have to be white and blue? What is the reason for that?
Well, I mean, you get spells that reference colours, don't you?
Well, I guess what? Because Teferi's white and blue and he's from Zalfir. Zalfirians are white, blue predominantly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I guess, maybe. I mean,
They're heavily societal based and they're an advanced society within the context of Dominaria, right?
And then, is Unyaro specifically known for phasing, or is it again? Is this just
well? This
is
my problem.
Just to ferry the plane?
Well, I think this is a recurring theme, and sometimes it lands and sometimes it doesn't. This is the same thing with your food thing.
Yeah,
they've really lent heavily into this plane does this, and everyone from the plane does the similar thing.
Mm.
Very, very heavy high concept planes of recent years. And obviously, Zelfir isn't a recent plane, but obviously the way it's expressed evolves through time with the game.
Yeah.
So yes, it is just to ferry the plane. I suppose it works because Zelfir, as a plane specifically, is the only plane, as well, I suppose New Phyrexia has now also experienced the same thing, which has been phased out itself.
Mm.
So has a kinship with phasing, if I was going to be charitable. But I think, no, I think this is just like to ferry the plane. And on other cards, we're going to see it really lands. On other ones, I don't think it does.
Mm.
This is one of the ones where I don't think that concept really works, broadly speaking.
Mm. I guess it's also interesting of like why they chose Inyaro planes over any other part of Zelfir. I'm not going to lie, I don't know much about the geography of Zelfir. It's also interesting that specifically we don't see any of the five sons of Mirrodin in the sky. So is this post? Is this obviously it's back. Oh, but do we even know if it's back? Could this just be a plane?
Well, no, surely the Mirrodin, surely the Mirrodin sons get taken with New Phyrexia.
Oh no! Zelfir's left with the five extra sons around it.
Okay, maybe that's something I missed.
Yeah, so that's a one interesting point that you don't see any of them in this artwork. So they're not deliberately trying to show. By the way, this is post invasion.
Yeah.
And again, Zelfir has been phased out for many years. It could be... Maybe that's what it's representing. The idea that it's if you planeswalk to it, untap all creatures and phase them out because this is Zelfir whilst it was still phased out. Maybe.
Robin Alawson, is the artist. And whilst I'm not particularly thrilled by any individual card that they've ever done, Topiary Stomper is a big one that they've done. The art style is actually quite kind of subtly really interesting and not actually something we see a lot. It's... purposefully not the most detailed art style.
Mm.
It's sort of very like watercolory, broad strokey kind of stuff. But it's, yeah, really nice.
Yeah.
Next one. Tawashi. Have I said that right? I never know if I pronounced that
right. I think it's Ashi, not Ashi. Tawashi.
On the plane of Kamigawa, modified creatures you control have trample, and whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player or planeswalker, draw a card. Equipment auras you control and counters are modifications. Chaos, whenever chaos ensues, distribute 3/1/1 counters among 1, 2, or 3 target creatures you control. So, artwork by Camilla Zutzenberg again. Showing... Well, yeah, this is showing...
right? Because...
the tree...
Poseidon's okay.
Poseidon looking super rad, and also you have what was the dragon?
I assume it's the Kaigar derivative. I can't remember what they're called now. Because it's Hidetsuku and Kairak.
There's one of the dragons floating around. It.
It's the blue one. It's the blue one.
There's too many dragons in Kamigawa.
I think. Now, of all of the planes we've come to so far, this is probably my favourite artwork out of all of them.
Yeah, Poseidon looks fucking rad.
It's also the framing, like they've got the buildings framing left and right. So one thing we mentioned before we recorded is that all of these have a slightly different framing to the old planes cars. All the old planes cars had a frame all around them.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of busied up a little bit, and I can understand why they didn't want to put them in, but they framed this view of Tawashi really, really nicely with the buildings left and right of it.
Yeah.
Again, it's the what was the latest set mechanic from the plane that we when we went there? Modifications, cool, fair enough.
Yes. Do you know why this one lands for me though?
Mm.
Is unlike food for Eldraine, because that's one of the ones. If you hadn't guessed by my turn earlier, that's the one that I thought fell flat.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I was playing Devil's Advocate earlier. This one works for me because the plane itself is a cyberpunk setting where everything is. It's very Kaladesh-y. I don't think people lingered on too much how much like Kaladesh. The new Kamigawa actually is.
Because I guess it was steampunk versus neon punk, right?
Yeah, yeah, like cyberpunk, right?
Yeah.
But the idea that they all modify themselves, modifications of the thing, it was a new mechanic brought into that set, but actually it was very flavorfully on point.
Mm.
I kind of feel this works a bit better. The Kamigawa itself is a plane which has evolved through technology. I kind of feel it works a bit better.
Yeah.
I mean, it was either this or, like, how do you express, like, Kami, I suppose.
Mm.
They did go all in on the modifications.
Yeah, I'm not against it. It's just, I mean, there's one part of it that I am against that I think we'll get to when we get to the other card that kind of shows why I'm a bit meh about it. But I think, again, it looks really cute. It really gives that feeling of Kamigawa, which I quite like. And again, something about modification. I like the fact they grouped this equipment, auras, and counters all together.
Yeah.
It was quite nice. With all the busyness that kept happening with Ikoria, creating all of these keyword counters and stuff like that, it was nice for Kamigawa to just rein back in and go, ah, they're all... It's like, you know, when like something says, oh, a non-creature spell, instead of saying a non-land, non-this, non-that. Yeah, it's like, yeah, instead of going specific, it just branches all of them, go anything that's non-creature. And I quite like that. It kind of, groups
modifications is really... really intuitive, because if a new player goes, well, what counts as modification?
Just go, anything that changes the card.
That modifies it.
Yeah. So is there a card attached to it? Is there an extra thing on it? Like, you know, that's a modification.
This is the second time we've seen Kamigawa technically now, isn't it?
Sokenzen, the one that gives all creatures haste, I believe was from the original set.
Which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
Right, okay, let me do the next one. Because 10 Wizards Mountain.
I'm not stopping you from doing them.
I know, and I just like to make a point of saying. So 10 Wizards Mounting, Plane Shenmang. Whenever you roll the planar die, put a +1/+1 counter up to one target creature. Whenever chaos ensues, creatures you control gain flying until end of turn. So Shenmang already had a name. It was already the Plane of Mountains and Seas.
So this is, just to be clear, this is where Zhang Yanggu and Mu Yangling.
Yeah, exactly. From. And I quite like the fact that they just had a really generic, like, the Plane of Mountains and Seas.
Well, it has a very sort of, Chinese mythology.
It feels, even though it's like saying like washing up liquid or toothpaste, or it's just doing the thing that it is. For some reason, that felt more flamboyant than giving just a random Shenmang. You know, that's just a random bunch of sounds to me.
Do you think that could have... I mean, A, that would be difficult for them to print on it. I suppose it wouldn't be. They got Asmoran and Monica Dyson and Cordicard.
Yeah, they've literally got a whole fucking pipeline, nothing else going on in it.
Do you think maybe Shenmang is... Because we don't talk a lot about language in Planes, right?
Mm.
Do you think that's just the word... Like, in English, we say things like Japan... People from Japan don't say Japan.
No. Like, well, it's like Deutschland versus Germany, right? Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah. No, I get it. So that might be the localization. Whereas, I guess the Plane of Mountains. Yeah, fair enough. Like they probably don't speak. I mean, language being a thing in magic.
That's my in-world justification.
Yeah. I mean, I think beyond that, the 10 Wizards Mountain, really, really cool. It looks great. I mean, it's very abstract. Like the waterfalls and everything seem to be falling at weird angles. The trees are growing at weird angles. It's quite nice that the formation is a bunch of different wizards' abilities. Sure. Does it explain anything more to me about the Plane of Shenmang?
No.
Not really. Why specifically Planar Die making +1/+1 counters? I mean, this is very much it was a very generic product. It was a very generic plane. Everyone was very generic characters. Everything about it was quite generic. It was like let's do another Asian influence without stepping on the Kamigawa side of things.
The World Series, is that what they called it? Mm. I can't remember what they called it. But it was good. And also, like, the Chinese market is a huge... consumer market for any IP, because there are fucking millions of people in China. And I think it was a nice way for Wizards to go, look, we Chinese market, we see you, here are these very sort of like reverent characters. I think it was very well received. So it was a good product, but we don't really know much about it.
And this doesn't give us more information. All it does is give us an ability from Zhang and then an ability from... What was the Mu? Yeah, so because Mu obviously does all the flying and Zhang does all of the +1/+1 counters, so it does one and the other. But at that point, the plane isn't defined by its planeswalkers.
No.
And that's one of the things I think I want to separate here. And again, I don't want to know the magic of the people we've already seen from the plane. I want to see the magic of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
So again, what is the plane trying to represent? Is it trying to represent the magic of the plane, or is it trying to represent the things that we've come to assume that the plane, you know, does? And I think this is a really good example of how, like, okay, they've not really given the 10 Wizards Mountain its identity. They've just given the plane Shenmang the identity of the planeswalkers we've seen from it, which I think is the wrong way to build this anyway.
Mm.
And I think it's a really good example of how they've done it wrong, where in other planes they've done it quite right.
Yeah.
You know, like Valor's Reach, for example, doesn't say anything about Will and Kem. I know they're not from there, but, you know, that's what we think of. It just says this is the format of the plane and this is how it works.
Sure. Artwork in that one by Iris Compiet, who has a very sort of like a whimsical sort of fey style, I'm going to call it.
Mm.
Yeah. Cool. Next up, we have Strixhaven on the Plane of Arcadios. Strixhaven is obviously the location.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that they've done Strixhaven, but they could have done one deeper. They could have been like Witherbloom Campus or something. Yeah. Or... the what's the library in Strixhaven? The
Biblioplex.
Could you imagine if they did the Biblioplex instead?
I mean, they've already done a card called the Biblioplex.
All right, fair.
You can't do a plane and a land for the same thing. All right,
I would say I think they would have maybe done better to have done like a campus.
Yeah.
That's just me. Instant and sorcery spells, players cast, have demonstrate. Fucking perfect. Busted.
Yeah.
Busted as hell card, right? Demonstrate was one of the mechanics from that set. The reminded set is whenever a player casts an instant sorcery spell, they may copy it. If they do, they choose an opponent to also copy it. That player may choose new targets for their copies.
This is a funky... If you're playing a Spellslinger deck and this comes up, then you're like...
Yeah, sick. The chaos is, whenever chaos ensues, return up to one target instant sorcery card from the graveyard to its owner's hand. So this is another win for the let's just put the mechanic from the set onto the plane, but it absolutely perfectly fits in.
Mm-hmm.
You're teaching people the spells. You also get to do it again. Perfect, you know? So I think this is a win for me.
Yeah, I agree. Again, like from a mechanical point of view, it makes sense that every instant or sorcery you cast in the school will be demonstrated to the class, so don't have any issue with that at all. And I think it's interesting that you bring up the whole Strixhaven as the title and then Plane Arcavius. I think it's a good example to people like that they won't necessarily know, like the average player might not realise that the plane is Arcavius and the location specifically Strixhaven.
Mm.
And I think that's maybe one part of the reason why they do that. They do it with another, there's another one they do it with later where you're like, oh, okay, yeah, okay. It's actually like the plane itself is actually not what we've seen. We've only seen a little sliver of it. And I think it would be weird for them to do anything else for this specific, but I think it's also one of these things of where they missed an opportunity, right? Of where they kind of wanted to go, let's do Strixhaven as a plane, but what they should have been going is on, we're going back to Arcavios as a plane, what location do we want to show?
Show us the southern continent, you can.
Show us something different to what we've seen, exactly.
Yeah, I think, do you know what, from what I've seen from, because they are not shy about going back to Strixhaven, and there's a lot of characters that have strong ties there, like Will and Rowan and Professor Onyx, lol. So we went back there in like the, you know, the Phyrexian arc and that kind of thing. I don't think we'll ever get another full set there. Yeah. I think the set was too much of a crash and burn because it was tied. They were definitely going to be tying it into Harry Potter. And it was right around the time that J.K. Rowling showed her whole turf arse.
Yeah.
And so I just don't feel like we're going to go back there, which is a shame. But
we do. I don't think it's going to be school related anymore.
No, I mean, they'll move away from it. To the southern
and the invasion there. Kind of showed how... It's one of the things I realised in the invasion when all of the teachers seemed to get done in, apart from like one couple, was like, oh, they've just completely routed the school. Like, if we go back to Arcavios... Strixhaven, unless we're seeing them rebuild the school, which it might be an interesting thing, but we could see rebuilding any institution on any plane after the invasion. It's probably going to be much more interesting to see what does the plane look like now that the school is gone.
I think it's going to be very much they'll do the Kasmina secret society storyline. And
yeah, because that's still going on. We still have no idea what she's
that's
doing.
That's my big... I know we, us two and Vorthos Mike really bought into the... alternate or like time traveling multiple oh my god, I keep forgetting her fucking name. Who's the Tarkir planeswalker?
Oh, Narset. Yeah.
We really bought into multiple Narset theory, and I seem to think that I'm also one of the very last people who's still going Kasmina secret society theory, but I definitely think that one's going to come around.
Because did she know so the big threat that she thought was coming was that irrespective of the Phyrexian invasion that happened before?
I don't think that's the Phyrexian invasion.
Obviously we never see her in that. We never see any aspect. She's completely... And is she supposed to be bad? Like, are we supposed to be considering her to be like, oh, is her motives... Anyway, we're getting sidetracked.
Yeah. But I think we'll see Strixhaven represented in that again. Or they will go back, but it'll be like a whole southern continent, like blood magic thing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They might do the Lost Covens of Ixalan, similar thing, right? Like, cool, we've seen the plane. A few years later, we'll go back. We'll essentially do a different set that would be on a different plane,
yeah,
but we can do it on Arcavios.
Yeah. Let's talk more about the Archaics and the demons. Of the
yes, which is actually really interesting.
Art by Alexander Forsberg, perfectly reasonable. Moving on.
Mm.
Do you want to do the next one?
Perfectly reasonable. I like that. I think it's one of the more striking artworks out.
Oh, sorry, Alexander.
No.
I didn't
more,
mean it like that.
I think it's more because it's quite sharp in comparison to some of the other ones we've seen.
All the artwork from that set was actually really vibrant and big. Mm. I think people really forget about Strixhaven because there was a lot of stuff going on around it, around people's own relationship to schooling, about the Harry Potter analogies, about the whole Killian Lou.
It was hard to not see the wood for the trees.
Yeah, which is absolutely fair and valid, all those things. But also, it was a beautiful looking set.
Mm.
I think we forget. Moving on.
Okay, moving to probably one of the most scariest locations in the entire multiverse, the Riptide Island, Plane Dominaria. If you weren't aware already about what the Riptide was doing, when you planeswalk to Riptide Island, at the beginning of your upkeep, create 2/1/1 colourless sliver creature tokens.
Wah, wah.
When chaos ensues, slivers you control gain haste and get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of slivers you control.
Kill it. Kill it with fire. Kill it with fire.
The fact that this place is still standing and they haven't set fire to the entire place. I'm actually going to double check quickly, because this will be a good example of, is it showing a moment in time?
Jesper Ising coming back. Has Jesper done much artwork in recent years? I don't think they have. I could be wrong. Let me have a little look-see. Release date. We're on Scryfall, by the way. Search with these things. Do you know what? No, is the short answer. They haven't done that much artwork in recent years for Magic. Obviously, Xur the Enchanter, you have My Coast, Teething Wormit. This just means going through Jesper Ising things. I suppose they have. Do you remember when like Jesper Ising was like the hot shit in Magic art? I think they just kind of chilled out a little bit. I don't know why.
I mean, I feel like you're going to have waves, right, of where you're going to be like, this is what I really want to do. Like, Wizards are asking this of me. I've got... Also, you might have, like, a back catalogue of ideas and, like, beginnings of pieces that you can kind of go, oh, let me finish that or change that ready for you. And you can kind of go, here's 20 different artworks. Here's my portfolio. Use it as much as you will.
Yurlok the Scorched Thrash was a Jesper Ising card. Wow.
So it might be one of those situations of where he had a bunch of like backlog and stuff and catalog that he was ready to push on, and then afterwards he's like, "Oh, okay, maybe now I've got my paycheck and stuff. I can kind of sit back. I've got a bit more notoriety as well. So maybe my natural like outside of Magic artwork is selling better. All that kind of thing. Yeah. There's probably lots of different reasons.
I think maybe his style has become a bit more subtle recently, and I've just not picked up on it as being Jesper cards. Anyway.
Yeah, so it looks like the island is still in existence. So this isn't like necessarily a flashback, as it were, which I thought it might have been. But yeah, this is where the slivers were created. I know we spoke about this when we were talking. When we were talking about slivers, I can't remember. I was saying about how some of the flavor text is some of the most haunting and most engaging flavor text that I read when I was first getting into Magic, because the slivers to me were just these random generic kind of like, oh, slivers make other slivers good, and I hadn't yet played, you know, against the monster that they are in as an EDH deck. But yeah, the Riptide Islands is I mean, and again, if you're playing a sliver deck and you happen to flip this, good on you. You did well. Good job.
There's not really much to say about Riptide. Like, it's a big story beat. Plane.
Yeah. If you didn't know this is where slivers came from, you do now.
Yeah, you do now.
Exactly.
Next up, we have the pit on the plane of the Abyss, which we had a bit of a discussion before we start recording as to whether the Abyss was in fact its own plane.
Mm.
It is. Whenever you planeswalk to the pit, each player creates their choice of a 3/3 white angel creature token with flying, or a 6/6 black demon creature token with flying, trample, and... at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice another creature. If you can't, this creature deals 6 damage to you. Which card is that?
That is
Lord of the Pit. Yeah. And then whenever chaos ensues, each player sacrifices a non-artifact creature.
Which is the ability of the card, the Abyss.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because it's actually, when you think about it, it's one of the only times a card has represented an entire plane. Because that's when you said, like, oh, is that initial plane? I was like, well, no, it was definitely a card. And this is going back to all the way back to Legends. I was like, no, it's definitely a card. And it's quite an expensive one because it's pretty good. But I didn't realise it is also representing the plane that, you know, the Lord of the Pit is from, which is interesting.
Dave Kendall is the artist. If you don't know who Dave Kendall is, go on Scryfall, look him up. Easily one of the most underrated artists in Magic. I don't think we've mentioned him once on this podcast, and he is phenomenal.
We have now.
Oh. Sorry, just
yeah, really, really visceral.
Whilst we look at the Scryfall.
Yeah, really visceral, really visceral artwork. Did a lot of artwork for Grixis artwork and things like that. Yeah, like, yeah, a lot of the artwork's very like, ew.
The pit is an interesting one. This goes back to what you were saying about Sheng Men. I wonder if the pit isn't necessarily what people of the pit call it, but what all other planeswalkers go, have you ever been to the Abyss? What, the pit? Yeah, fucking fuck that place.
Yeah, it's weird that it's called the Abyss, not Abyss.
Yeah, it's definitely what other people call it.
Yeah, because it might be that no one of the Abyss know, like, maybe call it. I mean, that's it. Again, it's interesting. Who are we reading the name from? You know, like, what point of view are we reading it from? So, obviously, are we just talking at what an average planeswalker would call it, or are we, you know, seeing it from the point of view of someone who lives there?
Is this what the plane
would refer to itself as?
Maybe the Abyss doesn't have a local name. Because it's only demons that live
there. True. Interesting. But again, it's like that idea of how are they wanting to represent it? The fact that they specifically still call this the Abyss and the Pit, but they changed the plane of mountains and seas to Shengmeng, is an interesting idea of how they want the plane to be perceived and represented and read.
The Abyss really triggers memories of mine when we have talked about many times, both on air and off, about imagine if your first plane's walk was to X plane.
Right.
Yeah. Like if you just went to Wrath and you're just like
ah! you just planeswalk spit, just fall and that's it, you're dead. So many planeswalkers have just fallen into the abyss.
And also, where you planeswalk on whatever plane. Mm. Think about all of the thousands of planeswalkers that across the eternities, mathematically speaking, have sparked and just ended up in the Ikorian Sea.
Yeah.
And died.
Yeah, because they can't swim, or they're too busy panicking to be able to planeswalk back away again.
Mathematically, some of them might have never even seen water before.
Exactly. That's true of everything. And then you've got to have the question of why do they all have the same atmosphere? And then we start straying.
Are some of them Euclidean fluid?
Yeah, exactly. How do they even speak the same language?
Yeah, are they all carbon based?
Do they have universal translators? Yeah, exactly.
Well, you've ruined my thing already. But there we go. Next up, we have Paliano.
Oh, which I think this might be my second favourite artwork, just because it's so detailed.
Artwork by Peter Dura.
Yeah.
Plane of Fiora. When one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, if there is no monarch, you become the monarch!
Put this plane in every single game ever.
Just have it as a world.
Have it all the time. Like, come on.
Whenever chaos ensues, create a 1/1 black assassin creature token with death touch and haste. Thank you, Queen Marchesa.
Yeah. And that's also another interesting. Imagine doing. So instead of doing plane chase, you roll the dice, right? And you do a random plane that is then your world enchantment for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
So you could have it that, you know, I mean, if it's the Abyss or something, it'd be ridiculous. So instead of switching up, you just happen to
be.
So
if you have a 100 card planar deck, you get a 1-100 die.
Yeah.
Roll it,
and then that's the effect that you have.
There
is going to
be some miserable games.
Yeah, because there'll be some that where it's like, you know, green creatures get this, and like, you know, you're not playing a green deck, so it doesn't essentially do anything. I quite like that. It's like a redux version, so it's not too crazy, but it does have a little bit of a different nuance to it.
Again, this is another great example of a plane which does the mechanic of the plane, or at least the set, I suppose, but it is what the plane is about.
It doesn't feel boring and generic. It feels flavorful to be like, as soon as you go to Paliano, there is everyone's gunning for the throne.
Yeah, yeah.
And anytime chaos ensues, there are assassins out there to attack you.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense. It kind of it's evocative of what you would expect to be. If you landed on the plane and you looked around, are these effects things that you'd be like, yeah, fair enough, I get what's going on in this plane now.
I would quite like to see Fiora in a non-conspiracy setting, a lot like Kylum outside of Battleground.
Yeah.
And I would like to see another city-state that's not Paliano.
Yeah, it's a shame, I feel like, that both conspiracy sets had really interesting draft archetype effects, and very, very cool, but it did limit like what the set can do. And even within that, a lot of the cards that they ended up producing, like Monarch, I think, obviously became a big part of Commander Legends. I think it's kind of interesting to see them do specific format sets, but then, yeah, as you say, I'd like to see it outside of that. Can they do it? Because a lot of Fiora was kind of circled around this idea of brokering information, and it kind of worked into the draft. I still think to this day, I never played it, but I still think it's one of the smartest draft formats they ever tried to do, because they went, how can we make draft specific cards? Mm-hmm. You know, how can we make draft feel less perfunctory? How can we make it feel more like, oh, that you only get this effect in this format, you know? And I think that was quite clever. It's a shame that obviously it then alienates any of the other formats that you're playing.
True. Moving on.
Indeed. I'll do the next one. Next! Plane. Theros. Non-token creatures are enchantments in addition to their other types. Constellation. Whenever an enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, you gain one life. When chaos ensues, choose a colour. Add an amount of mana of that colour equal to your devotion to that colour.
Cool. Peter Dura smashes it out of the park with his artwork as well.
Oh, this is glorious, isn't it? Oh my god, back to back. So, side by side, these artworks are so radically different.
Yeah.
And yet they're both by the same artist. Like, that to me blows my mind. Apart from the fact of, wait, that building in Paliano and that building there in Nyx, that's just the same architecture.
Well, I mean, ancient Greece and ancient Rome borrow heavily from each other.
Yeah, I suppose. That's fair. So I guess I like the idea that when we're in Nyx, everything's an enchantment, because you're in the land of...
We're not just on Theros, yeah.
I like the idea. Obviously, I feel like the constellation bit was just so that they made sure that it didn't, like, the static effect wasn't too boring. So at least something happens. Am I happy that it's a Soul Sisters effect? Not really. But you know, that's fine. And then I like the idea if you have the devotion as well as the when the chaos ensues as a devotion.
It's not a
Soul
Sisters effect. It's a Sithis effect. Ha ha ha.
But all non-token creatures are now enchantments.
Yeah, so whenever an enchantment enters the battlefield under your control,
so whenever a creature enters the battlefield, yeah,
but it's whenever an enchantment, it's any enchantment.
Yeah, sure, fine, whatever. It's still a Soul Sister effect, so I don't give a shit.
This is a perfect representation of Nyx.
Yeah, really can't argue.
Technically, the second time that Theros has appeared in a Planes Chase product, because the first one was Akros.
Oh, it was, yes. But that was before it was known as Theros.
So
yeah,
that'll happen
again
as well.
Yeah, cool. And yeah, again, I like it. No issues with it. Big fan. Yeah. Again, we're still yet to see any effects of the Phyrexian invasion. I feel like Paliano would probably be under a bit more... there'll be a bit more destruction.
Mm.
You know, same with actually Strixhaven shows no damage at all to it.
Well, maybe my hypothesis is wrong, but we'll definitely, when we get to Amonkhet, there's definitely an interesting setting.
Well, yeah, no, there's definitely some aspects of this that I feel like they just nebulously, all this artwork they've had for a long, long time, they didn't want to recommission the artwork to go, oh, by the way, can you put some Phyrexians in there now, please? Like, I don't think it matters.
Well, one plain card that is definitely based around the Phyrexian invasion is Norn's Seed Core on the plane of New Phyrexia. When, and interestingly, definitely before the end step events.
Yes, this is mid invasion. Yeah.
When your planeswalks to Norn's Seed Core, chaos ensues.
That's the exact definition of what happened when the fucking planeswalkers tried to go to New Phyrexia.
So before we move on to what the chaos is, in the original Planes Chase products, they had what were they called? Those just happenings.
Phenomenon,
which weren't planes, they're things that you zip to and then you move straight onto. This, whilst being a plane, is definitely a phenomenon effect, where it's like, boom, this thing happens, immediately move on.
Because they didn't actually... Yeah, interesting you say that.
There were no new phenomena.
I'm going to double-check that, actually. I don't want to, just in case. Carry on.
So, when your planes walk to Norn's Seed Core, chaos ensues, and the chaos is, whenever chaos ensues... This is one of the few times that the chaos thing is much longer than the actual text.
Right, so it's the only thing the bloody card does.
Oh, fair point. Whenever chaos ensues, reveal cards from the top of your planar deck until you reveal a plane card. Planes walk to it, except don't planes walk away from any plane. Put the rest of the revealed cards on the bottom of your planar deck in any order. So this means that Norn's Seed Core essentially just stays on the battlefield in whatever way that you're playing this format. It's now just there, and every time you planes walk somewhere, you keep the old planes, and so you're opening up the entire multiverse around the Seed Core. And every time you roll a chaos dice, all of the chaos shit happens, and all of the static effects happen, and you play magic forever.
This is the very definition of how, you know how we were saying in the story about like how it's really hard to imagine what's happening when the invasion's happening, and it's really hard to kind of, we didn't really get a good view of it kind of thing. We only really saw it from one side or the other side. We didn't see it as a grand scale. This is, again, mechanics within a card demonstrating the story in a way that you can't really do otherwise. And yeah, it makes so much... It's so cool. The idea it's colliding planes together and they both then happen concurrently, because that's exactly what happened in the story.
This is the planar card I can see people taking out of the planar deck to have any sense of the game.
Boo.
See, this is one of those things where it changes radically between whether you have it on the field as a world enchantment for everyone or you have it in your own planar deck.
This is like someone asking for ice cream and then complaining it's cold.
I disagree.
It's like you're playing a crazy
this
format.
This is like someone asking for a raw steak and then them driving you 4 hours out to a farm so you can shoot a cow in the head. I'm so sorry, vegans. You didn't need to hear me say that.
You just said just go and chill it. Anyway, yeah. Like I get it. I do get it. But at the same point, if you're in, you're in. And if you're not, then like whatever. Like, come on.
Well,
I've just
been called out.
To confirm, there were no new phenomenon, so it is a shame that, you know, there's that aspect. I mean, I guess the phenomenon were a bit too swingy, because when it's every player draws four cards,
or
wrath the board.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, fair enough, that's a bit too swingy, so I do understand they try to go, oh, let's not do that, let's not piss off anyone too much. But
Alexander Forsberg returns for this one.
This is fucking phenomenal. What an artwork.
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal. New Argive on the plane of Dominaria.
Why so many Dominaria cards?
Because Dominaria is a really big, diverse plane.
I hate Dominaria. It's lazy.
Dominaria, the plane. Lazy.
It's lazy writing. It's just anything goes. I'm making a really harsh stance on this without actually feeling it. I fucking hate Dominaria.
So I'm going to jump on that because I agree. In as much as there are some weird locations in Dominaria, there are some extremes. The extremes aren't very extreme. Everything's kind of just generically between 3 and 7.
Yeah.
You know? I think that's my issue with Dominaria, is that the extremes aren't that extreme. Whenever a historic creature you control attacks, it gets +2/+2 until end of turn. That would be an artifact creature, a legendary creature, or somehow a saga creature, which makes no sense. What, historic creature? Whatever. Okay, I guess if you happen to make your saga...
Well, no. That's just in the reminder text. It's just reminding you that...
Well, I guess if you have New Argive and Nyx in play at the same time, somehow, New Nornsea Core...
Or any of those creatures.
Then it would make sure it does work. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. When Chaos Ensures, reveal cards... So ensures whenever chaos ensues, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a historic card, put it into your hand, and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. This is another generic thing. Is generic good? Whenever a historic creature attacks, yeah, it gets +2/+2. Awesome. I get it. New Argive was a military city that is kind of based in its traditions. I get it. And the whole point of, we saw a lot of New Argive in that Dominaria set that had historic in it. Cool. Get it. Cool. Fine. Whatever. Other than that, what makes this more interesting than any other part of Dominaria? Nothing really. No. Like, does it tell anything really about New Argive apart from it's a very old city? No, not really.
The Leon Tucker artwork gives us a new perspective on it, but other than that, no.
It's a really cool. The thing is, it's really cool because it even looks like the whole city like sweeps left and right, almost like on a 180 dial.
I think it
dial.
Looks like a ferry. I think it looks like a
big
old ship.
It does look a big old boat. Yeah, and I think the idea is that parts of it move and stuff, and you know, New Argive is cooler than I think that this card gives it credit to, but then also it does represent the latest time we went to Dominaria, so I can't criticise it too harshly.
Fair enough. Naktamun on the plain of Amonkhet. Good job we're in Naktamun and not like the deserts of the dead or whatever they call it.
Yeah. Well, we're not in bloody, what's it called, Horsetown, which is a shame. Could have given us Horsetown.
That's not a real
place. It is a real place. It's where Crested Sunbear came from. Everyone is canon. Shush.
Each creature card in your graveyard has embalm.
Emblem.
Like emblem. Oh, God. Can't interact with it. Embalm. It embalms it. Oh. Each creature card in your graveyard has embalm. Its embalm cost is equal to its mana cost. Whenever chaos ensues, you may discard a card. If you do, draw a card. The reminder text for embalm is... triple the length of just the explanation of your embalming something.
Just you exile it, you make a 4/4 version. Oh, no, you make an exact copy of it.
It's an exact copy,
but it's a white zombie. Yeah, a white zombie specifically.
Yeah,
and has no mana cost.
I think didn't embalm. It was a 4/4.
That was eternalize.
Oh, for fuck's sake!
Yeah, that was what. So embalming is what the Amonkhet did naturally, and then the Scarab God eternalized
when
things.
You Lazar tapped.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, yes, embalm.
Boring,
blah, blah, blah,
most
blah, blah.
Boring chaos.
Whatever. Yeah. The artwork.
Yes.
We've sandbagged it enough. Again by Robin Olausen. Shows Naktamun in a state of rebuilding. So when we left Amonkhet from the set, the Hour of Devastation, the Hour of Revelation, the Hour of Gestation, the Hour of
Articulation,
whatever. They had all happened. Bolos did his thing.
The Hour of Articulation.
Bolos got his victory.
Yeah, Bolos just sat there teaching proper diction.
The Gatewatch disbanded and got pwned, and all of the Amonkhet got stranded in the desert, yada, 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 yada. What was the name of the force field that surrounded it?
The Hekmah.
Oh my god, your brain is.
I don't, I know.
Good.
I have no idea where it comes from.
I played a lot of these two sets because it's when I started getting back into
down
magic
as well.
Again. anyway, it was not a good place to be. So now we have started seeing. Oh, also, the only god that was left was Hazoret. And we saw that there was the white planeswalker that was an Aketra based planeswalker.
Bazri
Ket, that's it. Thank you. He was then hanging out with Hazoret. And it now seems like they are back in Naktamun, rebuilding, because there's lots of scaffold around, or the Bolas horns have been, whilst they're still there, pretty much, they've definitely been destroyed a little bit.
Filed them down a little bit as well, which is quite cool.
There's a statue, I'm guessing it's a statue of Hazoret rather than actual Hazoret, because Hazoret's not that big. It's being rebuilt, essentially, as long and short of it. And we don't know quite when this is. I'm guessing this is as we see it in modern times.
It's got to be post-devastation. I guess it's the interesting thing is we know in Jero and Hazoret that Hazoret's got her arm back again, and in the statue, the arm is back as well. Mm-hmm. We also see, is that in the far corner on the left, is that the second set of horns that have now been cut down a little bit, or is that another statue?
I think it is another set of horns. It's not the set of horns.
Because I guess the question then is that, because Bolas had kind of like had bent the sun's movement to his will, right?
Yeah.
So now that he's no longer a thing, like, I wonder what the, you know, what the celestial movement of Amonkhet is, and whether or not that's changed anything as well.
It's really interesting that they really avoided any sort of idea of celestial bodies, despite the fact of everything having a sun and a moon. And then pretty much from Inner Strad onwards, they just
everything.
Went, fuck it. They've all got their own solar systems.
they've all got space, and they've all got moons, and they've all got this, and don't worry about how far away it is or what happens when your planes walk to it. It's fine.
This just asks a lot of questions, which is good, because it's what these products should be doing. It should be showing possibilities. Planes chase products aren't for answering things, really. Therefore, flagging up cool ideas.
Yeah, it's also for making new players sit down and go, cool, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And there is a lot going on in this artwork that you can kind of like, why are they rebuilding? Is like, you know,
why are they back at Naxxmoon instead of doing something else?
Precisely, like, exactly.
Is the Hekma back up? Do they need it anymore?
Exactly. Has there been a big shift? You know, who knows?
Who knows?
God, we're awful. Mega Flora Jungle.
Oh God.
Why does it sound like a Disney product?
Well, read the plane.
Gargantica.
Guess what happens here?
Things are really, really big. Cool. So each creature with mana value 2 or less gets +2/+2. Whenever chaos ensues, create a 1/1 green insect creature token with flying named Butterfly. Oh.
But the butterflies on Gargantica
are 3/3s.
Yeah.
So this huge. This is the reverse Segovia, basically. And do you know what really fucked me off about this? No offense, John Avon. You've signed the playmat that my laptop is currently sat on.
Well, I was about to say, we met John Avon at Manifest Birmingham.
Lovely dude.
And he was awesome.
Where in this artwork does it demonstrate anything being large? How is this not just Lorwyn artwork?
Devil's advocate. I agree with you. Where in any Segovia artwork does it show that things are tiny? Outside of the battle card.
True, because the Hippodrome you look at and you're like, how do you show
Segovia
scale?
An angel is just an angel.
How do you show scale without having something to scale it? Yeah,
and
again.
In fact, Gargantica. Oh, fucking ass.
Gargantica!
Is there some etymology of Segovia that I'm missing where, like, Sergo means small? Please look that up as I
do it now.
So Gargantica was first mentioned. Well, it wasn't first mentioned. It was mentioned in Segovian Angel in the flavor text, where it talks about the butterflies versus the angels, and it was the least damaging battle the multiverse has ever seen. So the idea that it's the gnats. Sorry, they mentioned the gnats. So the giant gnats from Gargantica versus tiny angels are the same size, which I think is a really nice idea. This is so on the nose. It's almost comical, and I don't know if it's in a good way.
I think the whole point, right, is that they kind of had to do, when they did Segovia and then they did the whole everything gets -5/-0, I feel like as soon as they saw that flavor text, they went, well, we have to do Gargantic. I guess there might have been...
That's fair.
They might have had, before we even got to like the whole, which of the planes do we now need to represent because we've gone a fair few years into Magic and, you know, this plane hasn't got a plane, you know, various different sets haven't been represented. But they might have had a bucket list of like, these are the planes that we do need to show off again. Like, there aren't very many of them. There aren't many, like, Equilors. There aren't many, Pyrulia and that kind of thing. There aren't many planes where you go, oh, I wonder where this place is. A lot of them are, oh, yeah, we've seen that place. Oh, yeah, we've seen that place. Gargantica, that's the big version place versus the small place. There aren't very many that make you go, I'm now intrigued as to where this is and whether or not we're going to see it again in the future. You know, they've done some deep cuts. They've done some throwbacks. They've done some catch-ups. But they haven't done any, from what I can tell, they haven't done any plants at all. Which I think is probably deliberate because it's probably they don't want to give away any ideas they have going forwards. They probably have kind of probably running out of ideas, like gimmicky ideas going forwards. Mm. Who knows? Either way, it's kind of obvious that they have gone, let's just sit with existing names that you know you can find in existing lore.
We have 10 more of these left.
Shit, we're going to have to go quicker. how long have we been recording?
Only about an hour. Let's just keep
going.
Great,
good. Okay, cool. Either way, great, fantastic. Lityara on the plane of Kaldheim. Why specifically Lityara compared to any of the other realms? Who knows?
I think it's because this is mechanically the most applicable.
Ooh, applicable. I like a good word. When you planeswalk to Lityara, and at the beginning of your upkeep, create a 2/2 blue shapeshifter creature token with changeling. Mm. It is every creature type. Why does it have to be blue then? Anyway, when chaos ensues, choose a creature type. Put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control of that type. I don't know why, but the colour of tokens has now...
Well...
It's embedded itself into my brain as something I'm now really annoyed about, and I don't know why.
I'm not as annoyed about it as you are.
It's been like a month building up, and I didn't realise it until today that it actually really aggravates me.
The artwork by Jonas DeRoyo. Very cool.
Really cool.
Now, it's no secret on this podcast, I'm not a big fan of shapeshifters and changelings as a thing. And when I first read this card, I was just like, oh, fucking whatever. But actually, it's an interesting prospect, because what this does is it turns every deck, regardless of what playstyle you're choosing, be it Aristocrats or Spellslinger or whatever the fuck you're doing, every deck is now a viable tribal deck, because it gives you the creatures that can be all types, even if you're not playing a creature-based strategy, and then it pumps up all the creatures.
Pump it up.
So, like, because you get to pick a creature type, right?
Yeah.
So, say if I'm playing a Spellslinger deck that's pure Spellslinger, and you're playing a Werewolves deck, you have your Werewolves, and then you just go, oh, I get to pick Werewolves. And then I get to sit back and go, oh, I don't fucking know. I pick I. And it doesn't matter. Yeah. It just makes everything a tribal deck.
I mean, I guess the whole point, right, is it's a changeling plane, right? If it supports any...
Realm.
That is it, like... This as a card type being a plane, it's like it's a changeling plane in terms of it's always going to help. Yeah, no matter what tribal deck you're playing, it does help you.
Now, interesting bit about the artwork, what we've been talking about in this episode.
Yeah, the tree. World Tree is very much still there and very present.
I mean, I think the World
clearly
Tree...
Clearly pre-invasion.
Yeah, but there is... I think they do say in the story that the World Tree, or at least there's a flavor text somewhere, that mentions that there's like saprolings of the World Tree.
Yeah, it will definitely... I mean, the... essence of it hasn't gone. It's just that particular world tree is now gone.
Do you think next time we go to Kaldheim there'll be a new pantheon of gods? Because the
idea is that the elves will probably take back over again.
Well, yeah, exactly. Because the
I don't consider. I know that
Skoti won't have access to the juice.
I know it's specifically known as a pantheon of gods, but I don't consider it to be so much of like a you know how you have like a senate of we are the agreed 10 gods. Like, I don't think it is as clear cut as that in Kaldheim. They just showed it as that because it's easier. For
well,
them to
I think
do
didn't
so.
We describe it when because that was one of our very first sets that we reviewed. We described the Skoti as basically being like a mob family that found god powers.
Yeah,
right? Yeah,
and it's similar to like none of the other ones like feel like it's very different to like say Theros where each one's. Representing a specific manifestation of the sea, the sky, you know, it's not, doesn't feel balanced. It feels kind of, it was only balanced within the set because magic sets need to be balanced in colour.
But even their colours were like all over the shop.
Yeah. I don't think that in general, I think the godhoodness of it all, I think will probably be a point of contention going into the next time we see Kaldheim. I don't think there'll necessarily be another pantheon. I think there probably will be regrowing another world tree. And I also now probably think that all of this set probably got put into development way before the Phyrexian arc kind of was finalized.
Very possibly.
I think so. That's what my gut tells me. I feel like there was only like Nord Sea Core that was kind of like last minute, and I feel like everything else was just kind of like pre Phyrexian invasion, let's do a plane chase, and then it kind of got pushed back a little bit. I think that's what my theory is.
Next up we have Ketria on the Plane of Akoria. When you planeswalk to Ketria at the beginning of your upkeep, put your choice of Vigilance, Menace, or Trample counter on target creature you control. Whenever chaos ensues, exile cards in the top of your library until you exile a non-land permanent card. Put that card onto the battlefield or into your hand. So it's ability counters.
Yeah, it's ability counters and cascade.
It's fine.
Yeah, I just ability counters still rub wrong to me. I don't know why. It's just extra upkeep. Why specifically only those three abilities?
Why is it Ketria like?
Yeah, as opposed to any of the other. I mean, the whole plane does. I guess the idea is that they didn't show us any like area that wasn't factioned, right? Every single triome, for example, had its own like. They all did the same thing. Everything mutates, right?
Yeah.
It was just a cat dinosaur beast or a nightmare cat dinosaur. You know,
you just can't talk about Akoria without talking about it being an interesting but fluffed idea.
Yeah.
It was either Aftermath or March the Machine. We got a character from Lava Brink. We saw some more Lava Brink, actually.
Yeah, true.
It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, again, it represents the plane as a whole
Peter
very well.
Peter Dora artwork's pretty cool.
Yeah, like, it looks pretty. It does the thing. Can't complain. Mutation's happening. Cool. That's Akoria. It does
really want to know who was in the fucking Ozlith.
Well, it's broken now. Maybe they're out. Who knows?
After 10,000 years, I'm free!
It's like, oh, so you're just the Hellvort, but too... No, shit, that was a whole different plane. That was a whole
Rita
different
Repulsa,
thing.
Is that you?
Oh, don't, because they actually genuinely... Right, so weird random Power Rangers segue. They did a reboot of it.
They did.
But the only actors they could get that weren't either, you know, dead or otherwise unable to do it for various reasons, money-grabbing, were the Black Ranger and the Blue Ranger. And she came back as a mechanized. So basically, the essence of Rita got put into a robot.
Yes.
So
it's a mechanized. As the trailer
suggests. Yeah. I mean, I've seen. Who is it? That Alex Myers do a retrospective on it. It looks absurd, and it's some of the worst acting I've ever seen in my life. And I went to uni with you. So
wow.
Insane. Sorry.
For those who don't know why that's so offensive, Nathan and I did theatre degrees.
And Andy was actually really good.
Yeah.
So, if you couldn't tell, we've been drinking. Innishane.
Good luck pronouncing any of this, you
Innis,
fuck.
Innishane.
I'm not helping you.
Innishane on the plane of Creed. Or Creed?
Not helping you.
It's Welsh, I think, is the idea.
I don't think it is.
Gaelic.
You said this earlier.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is the word Gaelic G-A-E-L-I-C? And then the second word in this, heen, is H-A-E-N. It goes by the same structure, I think.
As someone with Irish family, they do not hesitate in calling
you said Irish. I said Welsh, though.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, that's why I did fuck it up. Good.
Well, as someone with a family that has... languages from the British Isles that is not English. Yeah. I can't even bring myself to say Gaelic or Gaelic because I'll get shouted at by people who speak Irish for even saying those kinds of things. I don't even try anymore. I just go, I'm really English, I'm sorry, you tell me.
Well, this is a vocal podcast, unfortunately, so I have to say at least some sounds that pretend like I'm right trying to read the words. Either way, this is a plane that's actually really, really not very well known, which is kind of good, but we're going to get to the what it does. When you planes walk to Innishane or at the beginning of your upkeep, mill 3 cards. When you planes walk away from Innishane, each player returns all land cards from their graveyard to the battlefield tapped. God, I want this on an actual, like, normal magic card. When chaos ensues, return target non-land card from your graveyard to your hand. Yeah, I need this. Why isn't there a planeswalker that does this? Really cool artwork. Aldo Dominguez the artwork. Giant tree.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of Lorwyn-y a little bit as well. Like, so we do know a little bit about this. This whole plane was made by the Maker. Who is an unknown entity that we don't really know much about. It's been known by Teferi and Ren and Six, or Ren in general, I guess we'll call them now, because they don't really have a thing to attach themselves to.
God.
So the planeswalker visitors we've had there are Teferi, Tempe, and Ren. Mm. So it's very, very... It's a proper, like... I would say it's a deep cut, because I believe it's been referenced recently.
Well,
it was referenced very, very lightly, very softly.
I mean, it was the setting for a novel called The Cursed Land, which is from pre, like, Brothers War era stories.
Mm.
So it's a real deep cut. And you can definitely see, like, Lorwyn, yes, is the obvious kind of, you know, British Isles fairy tale inspired plane. But things like Eldraine, Ir, which is from where, like, the Fomori are from, Rohan, I still maintain that's definitely meant to be sort of like Gauls at least, even if it's French Gauls or, like, you know, British Gauls as they would be sort of called or whatever, just yada yada that. But basically, yeah, the kind of, you know, barbarians in sort of the rise of Roman era kind of time. All of those kinds of craggy British Isles places. This is definitely one of those, you know. Which I don't think we'll get to see, because we're too busy with Eldraine and Lorwyn. They won't even go back to Lorwyn, let alone, you know, do anything else. So I kind of feel this is a weird one to chuck in, don't
you?
Yeah,
I feel like the reason why they probably did, though, is because if the Cursed Land happened years and years and years ago, and I think probably Teferi was one of the ones who was going there, I think Ren mentioned it when she was talking about...
Yeah, it was. I think I brought this up, didn't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, and you mentioned there was a couple of planes that were just kind of, like, thrown out there, and it's kind of nice that they went, oh, we've just thrown out a name of a plane, let's at least do it. The justice of giving it a playing card.
Yeah.
Again, can I really talk about what its abilities do? No, but the fact that it does have interesting... I mean, it's lands, and it gets them from your graveyard. I mean, sure, but as planes go, it's nuanced, you know? It facilitates a lot of different play styles, because milling cards into your graveyard could be good for various different things, not just if you're a lands player. Obviously, regrowing anything from your graveyard as well is pretty good. So, I mean, it's a really, really cool card. It looks beautiful. It does a cool effect. I'm happy. These are the kinds of things I'd want to see more often. I don't care about seeing, you know, another part of Dominaria, you know, as you said. I don't care about seeing, like, this plane that we just saw last Sunday. I don't care about that. What I care about is these, give me a random plane that that does exist within Magic that we've never seen a representation of that I can now get a picture of, so I can see it in my, I don't have to see it in my mind, I can literally see it with my eyes. Mm. So that's the kind of thing I think is maybe we're missing a little bit of that with this slew of planes, but at least we get some of them. I mean, they're not all like Gigantica.
Next up, we have the Great Eyrie on the Plain of Tarkir. Fucking rad artwork by Julian Cook Jun Wen. So this is the Abzan stronghold. Well, yeah, it is the Abzan stronghold. Yeah. The main base, although they are, you know, well, they are a fortress people. They're not necessarily nomadic. Anyway, when you planeswalk to the Great Eyrie and at the beginning of your upkeep, bolster 3, which was, it wasn't just the mechanic of the plane, it was specifically the Abzan mechanic, which I quite like. You know, they doubled down on that one faction, right? And then when chaos ensues, choose up to one target creature you control and up to one target creature opponent controls. Each of those creatures deals damage equal to its toughness to the other. Mm. Showing that the kind of the harsh lifestyle that the Abzan symbol is the dragon scales. So they're all about defense and fortification. So yeah, I mean,
why that over any of the other factions?
I don't think the Abzan got much of a shake. I think it was the forgotten one out of all of them. The amount of Jeskai shit we see.
Yeah, I guess you could, I was immediately going to say, what, you just do prowess if you're going to do Jeskai, you do ferocious if you get, I mean, that's quite boring. It's just big.
Everyone loves
big jump creatures.
Was it? Oh my gosh, what was the? It's not the Kolaghan.
Mardu.
Thank you. Like everyone loves it because the characters that came from Mardu were very pivotal. There weren't many very pivotal Abzan characters. Not many fan favorites.
You had Darak, because Daragaz was fine, but I believe, because wasn't there this big issue, right, of where
not Daragaz, the Dominarian one.
Their names are too. Their names are too similar.
I cut you off without offering you what the actual answer was.
Yeah, I mean,
but I mean, like the clan leaders. You had Anafenza and
Anafenza was cool because she died for what she believed in and then came back. And then the issue I have, I think, is Rayhan, the one who gets +1/+1 counters. Partner one.
Yes.
So I think the interesting thing about that was that they had to kind of go against their culture, right? And they had to go, do we listen to our ancestors or do we let them all die off?
Dramoka.
Yeah, but who am I thinking
Dramoka
of?
Dramoka is the dragon.
Maybe I'm thinking of. There's another named legend human that was part of their clan.
It's the one with the amber rod.
Yeah, exactly. You know exactly. Yeah, I can see the card in my mind, but I can't remember what the name is.
But that's exactly my point.
Yeah, that's exactly. So all of the others kind of had a bit more, I don't even want to say the word agency, but Zurgo was more interesting because you had the Sarkhan involvement.
Yeah.
Jeskai were more interesting because you had the Narset involvement. Ujjatai was also a little bit cooler. Like, the fact that Dramoka just basically went, no, you worship me now, was quite boring compared to all of the other ones. I mean, even then, we saw the Teema was really interesting because, what's her face? The one who steals creatures.
Yes, I know who you mean.
Because she was really interesting because she had more agency when it came to the Bolas arc because she ended up being almost like a herald for him. Yeah, it's almost like, and Silumgar, like the Sultai were really interesting with how Tasiga got kind of fudged over, how he like betrayed the Rakshasa and then they betrayed him back. There was a lot more agency, it felt like, to the other tribes or the other clans, whereas I feel like, the Abzan for some reason fell maybe a little flat. So, yeah. Also, it does look sick. The Eyrie does. The Great Eyrie does look really, really cool. The Golden City of Arazkar. I wonder what plane this is from. Ixalan. Yes, fantastic. shockingly enough, Ascend. If you control 10 or more permanents, you get the city's blessing for the rest of the game.
Oh, that's cool. Of course. It's like putting Monarch into the game. Just giving everyone Ascend is pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do agree. And then when one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, create a treasure token. Then draw a card if you have the city's blessing. Getting swole, getting good stuff.
As we said earlier, it's the race to the Golden City. Everyone's like getting treasure and looting it all and stuff.
And then whenever chaos ensues, you may put a permanent card from your hand onto the battlefield tapped. I think secretly is probably one of my most powerful ones out of all of them.
What is the chaos? I don't understand what's that.
Because you're advancing towards the city, right?
Okay.
Like you're putting more, because the idea was each of them was trying to put themselves, like almost like plant the flag in the city.
Yeah.
So the way I look at it is like, when chaos ensues, it's almost like you get carried away and you overflow and push, you know, you get to push your...
Without looking at the name of the artist, look at the art itself. Who's the artist?
Oh, is it Dana?
Yeah. Elena Dana.
You can tell by like the smoky, ethereal
the mist,
quality to it.
The colour palette, everything.
Does this Golden City of Arazkar, does this not look different to how your mind saw it after the Ixalan sets?
Yeah.
It feels way taller, it feels way more, I don't want to say the word, it feels way more Ravnican.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like, well, less Aztec-y, more...
Yeah, well, because it's buildings coming out the sides of mountains. Yeah.
It feels a little bit more like that, like, you know, that...
Rejuvenating Springs.
Yeah, exactly.
Another Elena Danner artwork.
Yeah, it feels a little bit... I guess this is very much where the artist kind of defines how the architecture looks, but this doesn't feel like Aztec architecture.
No, but if we remember, because we interviewed Elena, a lovely person, she did lots of artwork for Legend of the Five Rings. And this is
Rivendell.
Is the castle.
Yeah, this is very Rivendell almost.
And yeah, I mean, God, could you imagine, like, the artwork that she's going to be producing for the Lord of the Rings set?
It's incredible. Yeah. So yeah, it does exactly what you want it to. Again, it creates... this. The thing I like about this plane is it's very similar to... Oh, which one did we have before? I guess kind of Strixhaven. It wasn't what I meant, but it doesn't matter. It's very much of like, this is how the plane feels when you get there. Fiora, when you get there and immediately there's the monarchy happening. You're kind of you're submerged in the idea of there being a battle for the throne. In the same way, it's almost like you land in the plane in the race to the Golden City. And I quite like that idea. It's very evocative of the story that happened in the set the last time we were on that plane.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not generically giving you all of your creatures an ability from that plane. It's more putting your creatures in a situation of where this is what the plane would demand of you if you were to be there, which I quite like. I think that's quite a cool idea.
Next up, we have Gyrapur on the plane of Kaladesh. At the beginning of combat on your turn until the end of your turn, or to the end of turn, each creature non-vehicle artifact you control... non-vehicle artifact you control becomes a 5/3 vehicle in addition to its other types and gains trample haste. And crew two, whenever chaos ensues, return target non-creature artifact from your graveyard to your hand. So yeah, vehicles.
This falls more into the whole food side of things. Of like, is Gyrapur much more than vehicles?
Nah,
I guess not. Which is fine. It's fine, not a problem. Though I kind of, when I think of Gyrapur, I don't think of 5/3 trample haste vehicles. I think of flying smuggler copter.
Yeah, that's true. Vehicles. That's true enough. I mean, yeah, David Alvarez artwork does show like lots of like skyships and things.
I guess that's my only concern with that is that it doesn't feel very airshipy. It feels very juggernauty.
Yeah. Well, there was that creature. I can't remember what set it was from. Do you remember that golem creature that was blimp tribal?
From Jumpstart.
Yeah.
I can't remember what her name is because she's ridiculously expensive. But yeah,
we
it's the construct.
We surmised that they were from Kaladesh.
Yeah,
and we were intrigued because it's like the idea that Kaladesh has yet again had a jump forward. This
because we didn't see many automatons. I mean, obviously,
no, we didn't.
The filigree fox is
well, the changeling one. There was a filigree creature that you could put onto the battlefield and it became something else.
Oh, fuckity duck.
They did a secret lair where it was a goblin.
Adaptive automaton?
That's... No.
No.
Secret robot.
Yeah. I can
picture that in my yeah. Anyway. So, I don't know. Maybe that was wrong. I don't know what I expect from Kaladesh. I don't know if anyone knows what they expect from Kaladesh.
It's artifacts, right? It's the artifact set now that Esper... Oh, wait, never mind. That's just there on the right.
You see the Efflux Reservoir and the card art.
Yeah.
It's fine. I kind of feel like this is one of those planar cards which can really swing a game. Say if someone's really not doing much... And they're just kind of spinning their wheels.
Even if you're not an artifact deck, if you have a bunch of treasures kicking about, suddenly you're attacking with a bunch of 5/3s.
Yeah, this is a swing.
Good luck.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite... This is what you want from a plane chase deck, is you don't want it to be, let's make everything complicated and weird. It's like, no, let's start pushing... Let's give one player an advantage for right now, and then hopefully we'll swing it so another player gets an advantage, and that's kind of what it should feel like, right? As planeswalkers, we've not really talked about this, the idea is that you're bouncing between the planes and your battle between the two of you is taking place across various different places in the multiverse. Universe. And the idea is that you will have stronger magic in some planes and weaker magic in others, because there'll be different affinity to ley lines, different affinity to whatever's going on in the plane, and it's quite nice, the idea, if you're an artificer, you bounce into Gyrapur, suddenly you're like, you know, you've not even seen my final form. So, yeah, I do like that idea. Cool. Go ahead, say it.
Oh, sorry. The fertile lands of Solvinia on the plane of Antausia. That's what I'm going with.
Yep, good.
Sticking to it.
Ship it.
Whenever a player taps a land for mana, that player adds one mana of any color of any type that land produced. So, what, double mana? There's lots of double mana ones. What's the other double mana planes?
Oh, can't remember off the top of my head. I'll go and look at it. I'll be back in a second.
You know.
BRB.
Chaos. Whenever chaos ensues, reveal cards on the top of your planar deck to reveal plane card. Chaos ensues on that plane, then put all cards revealed this way to the bottom of your planar deck in any order. So is that ability that you flip it onto the top, you do the chaos in that thing, and then you put the that plane away and you stay on Fertile Lands. I think it is.
Until you reveal a plane card, and she was on that plane, they're put on.
So it's like you cascade into an effect and then the effect goes away.
Yeah, because you put all the revealed cards because that's also revealed.
Yeah. Lorenzo Lanfranconi, or Fraccioni, I'm sorry, has done this fucking beautiful artwork.
It is stunning. It's so enriched.
On its fandom page, it says it's a mana-rich landscape, which is exploited by powerful wizards. For nearly 600 years, the Great Magus War ravaged the world. In the aftermath of the war, which ended as wizards became unable to fight due to its altered battlefields, the plane was broken into 8 realms, separated by a central vortex. And you see the vortex in this artwork. I'm reading from, the MTG wiki on this one, because it's not something I've come across before.
Alolan Wilds from Chandelier did the exact same thing whenever a player taps a... But that's permanent for mana. This is specifically land.
Oh, okay. I mean, they've done like the realm thing on other planes. They've done the broken plane thing on other things. I wonder why they brought this one into the fold.
I also like the fact it's the Fertile Lands of Solvinia. It's not Solvinia. It gives it a little bit more fluff. You know, like it's a shame that, for example, Durepur isn't the sprawling city Durepur.
So yeah, this is nice. It's a pretty picture.
It's a very pretty picture. And again, it's a throwback.
It's a good game piece.
Yep. Sure. Can't complain. I mean, you can't complain about things you don't know that much about, right?
Quite.
And again, I think the name is just phenomenal. The Fertile Lands of Solvinia, the Golden City of Orazca, Durepur. Notice the difference.
All right, last three.
Let's do it. Esper, the last of the shards to actually get a plane card, which weird. I don't know why they end up being the last one. But artifacts. It's on Alara. If you don't know where Esper was. Artifact spells cost one less to cast. Whenever chaos ensues, creatures you control that are white, blue, and or black become artifacts in addition to their other types until end of turn. Then each artifact creature you control gains vigilance, menace, and lifelink until end of turn. Cool. Artifacts, apparently.
Does what it says on the tip.
Esper still does artifacts. Does a little bit of a Sidri thing, because I'm pretty sure Sidri animates artifacts and then gives them, but Sidri Galvanic Genius is not from Esper, if I remember correctly. Plus, is that a Phyrexian symbol in the sky at the back there, Andy? Or is it just that Esper, for some reason, has weird symbols over its sky?
Maybe.
It does just have weird symbols over its
sky. No, because it's meant to look like schematic.
Basically. Exactly, which is another thing of... metaphysically, Wizards, do you want to explain how the constellations on Esper are just generally written across the sky? And then also it's got the weird like clouds that get slit in half and get almost like chopped up at right angles, which I always really, really enjoyed about Esper. Fifth plane. They had to give Esper one. They gave one of the others.
Bruce Brenese is the artist who did a lot of the who does a lot of land cards. They did Godless Shrine for Infinity.
They did the Breeding Pool.
And Breeding Pool, yeah.
So pretty. And Fabled Passage. Oh my god, that's not great. Oh, they did the Godless Shrine as well. Okay, yeah, they've had a right riot recently.
Does what it says on the tin. Esper. Enigma Ridges on the plane of Echior. Equire. I'm going for Equire.
Yeah, Equire.
When you planeswalk to Enigma Ridges, each player who controls fewer lands and the player who controls the most lands searches their library for a number of basic land cards less or equal to the difference, reveals them, puts them into the hand, and then shuffles.
Oh, God. Yeah, good. There's a lot of words for catch-up.
Yeah, whenever... when it's land tax, right? Yeah. Whenever chaos ensues, draw a card, then you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. Artwork by Eitan Zana. Cool.
Really cool. This is the Dak Faden comic book one, right?
Yes.
Equa. Cool landscape. This is the very definition of why I like plane chase as a product, because I get to see weird formations of planes that I've never seen before that make me go, oh, wow, what's going on? Want to go there? Never going to get any more information about it, but at least it gets me asking questions. This is very much, it serves a function, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's the whole point is it's an equalizer.
Yeah, this is the rubber banding in Mario Kart where everyone gets to catch up if they're losing. Fine.
Yep, cool. No blue shell, thankfully. Good. Cool, last but not... I mean, we've glossed over it. It's one of those things of the planes that we know less about, it's hard to give, like, flavour analysis on the card on because we just don't have anything to go on. You know, if anything, they kind of get away. They get freebies with these cards because we can't possibly criticise or critique it.
Yeah.
You know, Fuck you, Gigantica.
Gargantica.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I got that throwaway plane's name completely wrong. The Caldaya, last but not least, on the plane of Capenna. Creature spells you cast from your hand have Blitz 3. Whenever chaos ensues, return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. Annoyingly, this kind of does denote the issue I have with some of them, which is just... I mean, I think Henzi's a really, really cool commander.
Yeah.
I think putting that ability on a plane is fine. I don't think it's anything more or anything less than
I don't
that.
Think... Why is Blitz the Capenna mechanic? Like, it's fine if it's a mechanic in New Capenna.
Well, because I guess what were the other ones? There were shield counters. Don't really want to have to do that. That's even more counter nonsense. You've got... casualty, which fair enough could have done, but I think there's enough sacrificey effects already. You've got I've already forgotten all of the other ones. What were the other ones? Tell me the other factions of Capenna and I'll tell you what their abilities were.
Good.
Oh god. No. What were they? Fucking they were shards, right? So then you've got tokens with the cabaretti. And then the Obscura were Surveil. What was it? Was it Surveil?
No.
Oh, God. Either way, right, so clearly it was the most memorable of the abilities.
I really liked the families.
Yeah,
oh,
no,
God.
I think they're great. I just think that this is probably translated.
Brokers,
yes. The brokers with the shield counters,
yes.
Great.
Brokers,
yes.
Good.
Oh, so the thing
God.
Is, like, so out of all of them, I think the Blitz is probably the most interesting to put on a plane because it then it allows a lot of your stuff to do cool shit. Now, if you've never played against a Henzi, the toolbox deck, it's silly. It does silly things. And it's quite nice for you to then go to a plane and go, oh, this adds a whole interesting new facet to how my deck plays. Mm-hmm. And I think Blitz does that a lot better than, say, shield counters or casualty does.
Yeah, fine.
That justifies our idiocy right there. Good, fantastic.
And I guess, it is in the Caldaya, which you had to remind me was the Routier's base or operation, and Blitz is their mechanic. Yeah. So it's the same sort of thing as the Abzan Eerie. But, like, I don't know. I mean, this is another one by Julian Kok Jun Wen, and the artwork is fine. I don't think it's very Riveteri or very Capennery.
It doesn't. I'd say it's very Capennery just by the web proxy.
Limousine.
By proxy of the architecture. Yeah. Like, it could be Ravnica, though now I say that. Like, it could very easily just be...
Well, that was everyone's problem with New Capenna in general, is that it was essentially just
Yeah, but when
Ravnica.
You make city the plane, anytime you do a city, unless you have its architecture be very, very radically different to something Renaissance-y, which is kind of what Ravnica... You tell me how Fiora isn't just... a different part of Ravnica.
My theory is that it's all Ravnica.
Yeah, everything was all Ravnica. It was always Ravnica.
It was always Ravnica the whole time.
Because, yeah, Kaladesh, also Ravnica.
Just Ravnica.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dominaria. Dominaria is just a continent on Ravnica.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Again,
we don't know what happens beyond the Rebel Belt.
No one knows. No one knows. I mean, they
That's what the wasteland parts outside of New Capenna, that's just the other side of the Rebel Belt.
Oh, it's true. Got it. Amazing. Phyrexians were already on every plane. Who knew? Cool. Well, we've descended into nonsense at this point, as you could probably tell. We've got to the end of all the planes.
Well, what do you think? These are the first new planar cards in quite some time. What do you think?
I'm a big fan. It's funny, because going back through to try and find the other plane that doubles your mana, I got to have a little look through everything. And I kind of forget just how many places we have seen represented. We've got Nephalia and Stenzia, for example, off Innistrad. Like, we have seen a lot of different places. So I think it's one... My initial thing is I'm disappointed we haven't seen more future plants. There isn't any planes that we didn't know about already. And I think it's probably deliberate. Again, the Monsang and the Akroses of the first time they did Plane Chase and stuff. I get why they might not want to do that now. They might need to be like, one, we've only got so much space. We need to show all of the random throwback planes as well as the catching up all the planes that have been out for the last 5 to 10 years, you know, depending on when you're counting the Plane Chase from. So... I don't dislike them at all. I think from a play point of view, they're probably gonna. For me, once you get to like 70 plus planes, it's just another random bit of randomness. It's not like, oh, this one specific plane I think is really cool, because you're probably gonna see it once a year on the table. None of them are particularly offensive. Even the generic ones, I'm like, yeah, cool, whatever. You had to represent the wilds without giving away too much about what you want to do with the wilds. Am I gonna complain? No. On a side note. The top left of this page is the Lux Foundation Library, so we are going to see planes from other IPs that are then going to be able to interact with it. how I feel about that. Do you know what's funny is when I first saw it, it took me a long time looking at the symbol before I realised it was a TARDIS to go, oh, this isn't magic. I mean, it is, but it's not a magic IP. It took me a long time to realise, because I was like, oh, I wonder where the Lux Foundation Library is. That sounds cool. You know, I'm not a big Whovian like anymore anyway, since the Eccleston days and the David Tennant days. Like, I didn't really watch much past that. So I think it's interesting that they continue to do them. Will probably be a long, 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 long time before they do a big product like this. But knowing that there's at least one more coming with the Doctor Who set means that they're probably going to try and keep this going for a little bit. I think they it's Wizards. They like adding extra weird nuance to the game, and they always want to produce more bits of cardboard that they want you to buy.
Yeah, fair.
So, I mean, I nothing against it. There's some beautiful artwork. I mean, we are massive artwork shills. We absolutely love what to look at as well as to read out the read the cards. And I think some of these artworks are some of the best we've had from Plane Chase.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I really can't complain. Like, very, very happy. Again, would have just maybe liked to see another version of, like, Equilor. Like, maybe show me some other places that that are upcoming, or maybe you can't. I don't know. Apart from that, I have nothing bad to say about it.
Yeah, I agree. Wish there was some more obvious plants or, like, tester planes or whatever. Maybe just something really buck wild.
Give us Angrath's plane, so we know at least that you know that there's a cowboy set.
Could you imagine if they did a plane where it's the artwork was two like wizardy looking cowboys on like doing a standoff, like doing like a quick draw, and like we all know what that looks like. You got the you got the town either side.
Uh-huh.
You got the two gunslingers like stood across from each other, like in silhouette. You got a clock somewhere. One of those silhouettes just happens to have, like, horns, and another one has, like, a big, like, tail or some shit.
Yep.
And just don't even give it abilities that are that particularly relevant. It's just, like, each creature gets haste or some shit.
But it's a glance.
But you just get to go, like, what the fuck?
Expand,
just one.
Expand the lore of the multiverse. Don't reinforce it.
Yeah.
Maybe is the overarching complaint I have here, that even though, yes, we're seeing planes like Creedy and Gargantica and stuff like that,
that's reinforcing names that we've already seen and giving them representation, but you're not expanding the lore. You're expanding my visual lore of the game and the multiverse, but you're not expanding my knowledge lore necessarily.
Sure. All right, well, tell us on Twitter what you think about these planes, what planes you would like to see, what you think you should have seen, new planes that you didn't know about. At MT Flavoring is our Twitter handle, flavoring with an OU. My personal
OU.
My personal Twitter handle is at Andy Manface. Nathan's yours is
at the Fox in the Moon.
Emails go to mtflavoring@gmail.com. Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh, it's like I'm so bullshit nonsense. Don't get it until 5 a.m. because they're releasing it all the same time around the world. But my good god, by this time tomorrow, I'd have played 10 hours of Breath of Tears of the Kingdom.
I literally haven't turned on my Switch this year, which is crazy because we're now 5 months into the year.
That is crazy, actually.
That is kind of wild.
To be fair, I've only turned it on to replay Breath of the Wild in preparation for Tears of the Kingdom.
See, I did 2 playthroughs of Breath of the Wild. I'm fine. Obviously, looking 2? Well, how many did you do?
I've done like half dozen by now.
Really?
Yeah.
I love Breath of the Wild.
It's one of my favourite games. So it's interesting. Because I have my regular profile where I've obviously completed everything but the 900 Koroks and a couple of side quests. Like, I didn't know there was this whole restoration village thing and you can put money into a business. Yes. And they build. I had no idea about this. So anyway, whatever. So I've got my main account where I've completed
Tarrytown. Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea. I've completed like 95% of the things on that one, and then I've created a second profile that I can just reopen, and each time I just play it differently.
It's really good to if your Hylian shield gets broken, you get to buy it again in Tarrytown.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Fuck.
There's like a specialist armor merchant.
Nice. I mean, I don't block very much, so.
Okay. All right then.
Blocking's for control players.
Are you going to do your same method where you're going to explore the entire map without doing any missions first?
I don't know. I'm going to see how when it hits me what I'm going to do, because I don't remember exactly what I did the first game.
I remember you did, because you told me.
Did I just barrel off and do everything?
You did enough to get like half decent armor that wasn't going to get you killed instantly, and then you did every tower so you could open up the entire map.
That was it.
And
yeah.
Then you started doing the
quests. It's what I advise my... So my mate Greg literally got the game about 2 weeks ago, has never played it before, and I was like... He was like, well, what should I do? I was like, start the initial quest, like go and get your camera, and once you've got your camera, get every tower.
I fully disagree.
Because for me, the journey of going to every tower lets you explore all the different... And you get lost.
You get killed so much.
Well, if you're bad at the game, yeah. But most of it is like you just get to explore everywhere naturally instead of feeling like you're obliged to.
I'll tell you what, Greg. Just head for that really dark-looking tower and see if you can beat the boss in there first.
Well, yeah. I guess it's one of these things... That's one of those things about the game, right? Is there's no right way to play it. Like, because I just told him, do the first few quests and then after that, you're kind of... It's up to you.
The amount of Lynels you must have faced before you could even defend against a fucking...
The good thing about that is if you do it early, before beating anything, all of the enemies are really low level. So none of them have upgraded or increased in strength. So as long as you're not really reckless, you should be fine because nothing's too overpowered.
Is there anything you're looking forward to seeing that we didn't see in Breath of the Wild but in other Zelda games?
Dungeons. Actual dungeons. Okay. Not shrines, not divine beasts, actual factual dungeons.
Because
we're going to have down in the ground, we're going to have up in the air, and then you've got the Hyrule in the middle. I want to see some dungeons.
Okay. I'm looking forward to seeing other Zelda enemies come back. Like I just said Octoroks. Octoroks weren't in the game, but like I was thinking of Zoras. But I want to see Octoroks. I want to see Lycrox.
Octoroks were in Breath of the Wild. Fucking pop up the crypt show all the fucking time. Bastards. I hate them.
In my mind, when I think of Octoroks, because I was a Game Boy Zelda player, they were on the floor, walking around.
Yeah, true. True. Yeah, I don't...
I'm looking forward to Lycrox. Give me a Lycrox.
Yeah. To be fair, I'm just excited to see... For me, what I'm excited to see is how they... For me, the lore is the cool thing. And it was nice that Breath of the Wild was all it felt really, really intense, but it was also completely irrelevant because it was 100 years after the big things had happened and it was all preamble for Ganon actually coming back. The Calamity, cool, horrible, oppressive, but all of it was just, now we've got Zelda back, now Ganon can come back for real.
What do you reckon about the fact that the Breath of the Wild setting, in terms of the different timelines of all the Zelda games, is the end point, is the convergence of all of them into one universe? Because there's
such a tricky question.
There's evidence of each timeline.
Yeah, because how they justify that then? Because obviously they've made a big point of going, right, it's split based on what Link's actions were, and it's split into those very distinct three timelines, and then there's such a big gap between any of that and where Breath of the Wild happens.
Yeah, because it's meant to happen hundreds and hundreds of
so
years.
So now, what I like is that even if we're getting the end of the story now, and they complete the story, there's still lots that can happen in 10,000 years that can then justify how and what and whatever. Like, I really enjoyed, I didn't play it myself, but the Hyrule Champions or whatever it was, where it was almost
the Hyrule Legends.
Yeah, and you got to play as the champions during the time. You got to play as Impa back in the day, and you got to see her and how crazy powerful she was. Like, that was great because you're filling in lore of things that I've already learned. You know, and you get to almost like, it's almost like backtracking. You know, so I would like to see a little bit of that to know, cool, so how is Ganon, why wasn't Ganon actually him? Why was he just spreading his malice? Because, I mean, obviously we see him as a weird, mummy kind of thing, and he comes back, so... And then it looks like we actually see Demise, who was the initial, in Skyward Sword, the initial cause of all of the repetition of Ganon always coming back, that always being a princess, and there always being a hero to battle against it. He's the one who set that cycle in motion. I think we get to see him again as a little still. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Like, the exploration, I know the game's going to be good, is about how much the story now impacts the game, because a lot of the story for Breath of the Wild was pretty just in the background.
Well, it was meant to be hidden, forgotten.
Yeah, anyway. Found in your own pace, which is fine, but it kind of takes away from the gravitas of what's happening. Instead, just puts the onus on the game has to be good enough for you to enjoy it for 150 hours, which very clearly was. So, yeah.
Well, you've been listening to Hyrule the Flavouring.
Magic the Hyruling.
Thank you so much for listening.
See you soon.